Good evening, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to today's City Council meeting. It's Tuesday, April 22nd at the Veterans Memorial Hall. For the record, all council members are present, and we do have a quorum. We'll call the meeting to order. And at this time, if you'll please join us in a moment of silence. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Pannoni, closed session report.
There was no closed session, so there's no report.
Great, thank you for that reporting out on that. And at this time, we have mayor and council members' reports. And to my left, George, do you have any announcements?
Yeah, I just want to remind, first of all, God, really nice to see the sidewalks coming in, isn't it? Long overdue. Thanks a lot to all that, man. That looks great. Anyway, I want to remind you that it's at the Vets Hall this Friday, 1 o'clock. We're going to celebrate Bill's life and Bill Yates' life there, and we'd like to see a great turnout for his family. The city owes a lot to Bill, so let's turn it out and make his family feel real good. There's going to be some great food there, too. I'm not going to lose any money on it, though. Well, yes, a little bit. Yeah.
Christine?
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I have two announcements coming to you from your Estero Bay Alliance for Care. They are the group that's coordinating the Monday night community dinners here in the Vets Hall every Monday night from 5 to 6, and anyone is welcome to come and eat dinner with us. We have, we have a good group of folks who are volunteers who are taking turns presenting the meals, and they're not just yummy, they're also a great experience and very warm, a warm community event. So they are continuing. We're serving between 40 and 50 people each Monday, so please spread the word. Another opportunity for volunteerism in Morro Bay is happening this summer between the food bank and Del Mar Elementary, and we're even extending out to the old Morro Elementary location this summer for two locations for summertime free meals for children. So kids under the age of 18 can come and eat a meal for free, but we really do need volunteers to help make it happen, especially since we're expanding from just the Del Mar site that we did last summer into the old Morro Elementary School site. So if you'd like to volunteer, it would be great to have you just one day a week for maybe a two-hour time is all you need to do. And the months where we're serving the meals are June through August. And you can contact the food bank is the best way to get involved. Contact a woman named Andrea. Her number is 835-5787. 835-5787. That's Andrea at the food bank to get involved this summer. And thanks to all the volunteers. It's volunteer month of April, and certainly if you look and you see the things that we're doing in Morro Bay, at least just through Estero Bay Alliance for Care, we really have quite a caring community, so thanks to all of you.
Thank you. Nancy, anything?
Yes. There's so many wonderful things happening this month. I'm going to try to limit myself to just a couple. This week is your last chance to get your tickets for the AAUW's 28th Annual Garden Tour, which will be held from noon to 5 on Sunday, April 27th. I have tickets. They're available at Echo Sage, at Coalesce Bookstore, and a couple of other places. Also, you can get one there if you decide at the last minute. And just one other little quick thing. While all the proclamations that are going to be presented this evening are valuable and very important, there's one that's the closest to my heart, and that's the month of the young child. The importance of high-quality early childhood programs and the prevention of child abuse were first recognized.
Working with the Chamber of Commerce, hosting neighborhood workshops for each of the four districts in the Morro Bay Business District's area. And the upcoming workshop for North Morro Bay, North Main, is going to be April 28th at 8:30 a.m. at the Community Center. And that's hosted by the Chamber of Commerce. And it would be a great time to come out and learn about what the proposed sign ordinance could mean to your business on North Main Street in that area. And once again, that's going to be April 28th at 8:30 a.m. Our staff will be there, Chamber of Commerce staff will be there, and it'll be a review of that ordinance in preparation to bring it back to the council. And the last district to have a meeting like this will be the Embarcadero, which will be sometime in late May. So you'll hear announcements about both of those. If you'd like more information or to sign up on to be on a list to be notified for these, you can call the chamber and talk with Lisa at 772-4467. And one other item that I wanted to pass over to Mr. Livick to review is the specific plan efforts with Cal Poly for the Atascadero Road and the public workshop that's going to be happening fairly soon.
Thank you, Councilperson Smuckler. We are working with the Cal Poly Masters Design Studio for a community visioning effort. Their master's level city and regional planning students will be looking at the North Atascadero Road, North Embarcadero area around the existing wastewater treatment plant, all the way up to the intersection with Highway 1 and 41 to look at potentials for that area. And their first community workshop will be held just prior to the Planning Commission meeting, and I'm going to look on my calendar so I don't get the date wrong. May 6th, that's correct. On May 6th, so it'll be 5 p.m. May 6th will be a presentation, and we'll be taking public comments on their work effort thus far. We have a Planning Commission subcommittee that's helping out with that. Commissioner Luer and Teft were able to attend their class on last Friday to provide some input into the process, along with our contract planner, Whitney McElvain, into their SWOT analysis. So be sure everybody has an opportunity to come out and look to see what these young folks have come up with. And this initial stage will have a follow-up to that for their final presentation at just before the first Planning Commission meeting in June. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And we have two other announcements. We have one from Chief Knuckles on for the Friends of the Fire Department, and then we have one announcement from Chief Christie on the Police Department.
Thank you so much. This weekend we're having an open house sponsored by the Friends of the Morro Bay Fire Department. They're doing a membership drive. The Friends have been very important to the progression we have in the fire department. They provide fundraising events for equipment, medical equipment, for training, and they also provide fire academy funding and scholarships for our new reserves and also paramedic training funding. It's a great time to come by the firehouse. It's between 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock. We're going to have the fire safety house there. We're going to have some live demonstrations on our medical emergency services that we provide, showing off some of the equipment that the Friends have purchased through grants through them. And also we'll be providing technical rescue demonstrations off our fire tower that we have. So I hope to see you there.
Great. Chief Christie.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Thank you very much for providing me this opportunity. And it's that time of year for our annual Tip-A-Cop dinner. Our Tip-A-Cop proceeds go to benefit the Special Olympics for San Luis Obispo County. And this year's event is on a Friday. That's a good day because folks typically like to go out and have a nice dinner. It's on May 9th, and the service will likely be terrible as it has been in the past, as it's members of the police department that do the service. It's 5:30 to 7 o'clock at the community center, and it's $20 for a ticket. Table of eight is $150, and you can get tickets at the police department. Our number is 772-6225, and we hope to see you all, and we have plenty of tickets to sell. Thank you.
Thank you. And I have one announcement. It's just basically a recap of the California Marine Affairs and Navigation Conference from Washington, D.C., and I was wondering if AGP can help me with just the brief map that I had presented there. It's not a very good map, but it's just I'll just speak to that briefly. All those little dots and names out there, those are all the members for the California Marine Affairs and Navigation, and that Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund is a tariff from all the commerce, so all the container ships, ships that might transport goods, coal, other things like that. So all the harbors, as an example, whether it be L.A., Oakland, Stockton, other harbors that are listed up there, those ports through that tariff of transportation of goods contribute to the overall fund for maintaining all the ports and harbors within the nation. And those funds are dispersed throughout all the harbors and ports nationwide for maintenance, improvements, et cetera. The idea behind the California Marine Affairs and Navigation Conference and this membership is that recognizing that we're a system, if all the ports are healthy, in other words, as an example, if Morro Bay, the harbor, was no longer dredged and we weren't able to have a fishing industry here, then the fishing vessels might be pushed out to another harbor. And then that harbor is pushed out to another harbor, so on and so forth, to a point where then we have some of our recreation and fishing fleet into our shipping harbors, and that way it would take away from the goods and services and commerce that is transported through the state of California. And some of the statistics on that for revenue purposes, we're looking at about $1.2 billion worth of funding through this Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund. California contributes approximately 32% of that, but we, in return, we only get about 3.5% of that back to maintain our harbors. So that's one of the reasons the California Marine Affairs and Navigation Conference participate on an annual basis. I'll list out some of the legislators and some of the departments that we speak with. NOAA is one of them. Army Corps of Engineers is one of the most significant because they are the ones behind allocating the funds to all the different harbors. We have Senate Appropriations staff. We have United States Fish and Wildlife Services, EPA. To list a few, Border and Customs Protection, FEMA. So all these organizations, are on the list of our agenda when we go back there, and it's all in the spirit of maintaining healthy ports and harbors within the state of California. So just a brief overview. There's a lot more information. CMANC is C-M-A-N-C. There's a website that has information on that if anybody's any more curious on that. And that's my report for the Washington trip. So thank you with that. And with that, if there's any other announcements, I would proceed on to public presentations, which we have none. But at this point, before we get into public comment, we have a business spot item, and then we also have three proclamations. So I would start with the business spot first. And yeah, thanks. We had a lot of people coming up, so we have a business spot. I'd let you speak, and then after you get done, I'll go into the proclamations. So I would ask our council. Thank you. Are we okay on that now? Thank you. I'm kind of. Thanks. Was it my hearing aids?
No.
Or was it the sound
was going
system?
On?
Hi. So please introduce yourself. Thank you.
I'm Troy Wathen, and my wife Summer and I are the founders of Mind Gym. We tutor here in Morro Bay and the greater San Luis Obispo area. And the way that we approach tutoring is somewhat like the old gymnasiums of the past, where they include physical activity as well as mental exercise. We do one-on-one tutoring. We also do SAT, PSAT prep for those that are wanting to get into college. We also do some college coaching, helping students to get their resumes ready for getting into college. I've been in education for about 20 years, working with K through 12, and have a real passion for helping children succeed. And that's why we started. We're housed in the Chamber building right now. We have an office there. We're one of the incubator programs for the Chamber of Commerce. And why we did this was, we do it the same reason every business is in Morro Bay. We want to stay here and have a vibrant life here in Morro Bay and help our neighbors have the same. And so we'd love any students that are just needing that little extra. We've got great schools in our area, but children do need a little bit of extra help sometimes, and we are here for that. So thank you, and thanks for giving us this time.
Thank you for that. And before we go to public comment, I just want to have a consensus or agreement. I'd like to pull items A2, A3, and A4. Those are specific proclamations that we were discussing. Month of the Child, declaring April 14th as Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month. So here we go. City Council and City of Morro Bay, California, whereas Saturday, April 12th, 2014, will commemorate the Day of the Child, celebrating during Children's Day in the plaza from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. in San Luis Obispo Mission Plaza, a day where children and families can play, learn, and interact with the agencies and programs providing services throughout the county. And whereas the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month is a time to recognize that children's opportunities are our responsibilities and to commit ourselves to ensuring that each and every child experiences a high-quality early environment at home, at child care, at school, and in the community that will promote their optimal development. And whereas the Morro Bay City Council recognizes that every moment in a child's life is an opportunity for that child to learn, and that the quality of these experiences may determine whether a child succeeds in school and in life, and that all children need caring and loving adults in their lives. And whereas the activities of this month will provide an opportunity to acknowledge youth and early care and education programs and their dedicated staff, and to raise the awareness of the community, employers, and elected officials of the need to improve the quality, availability, and accessibility of such programs. And whereas many community partners, including the San Luis Obispo County Child Care Planning Council, First Five San Luis Obispo County, Community Action Partner of San Luis Obispo County, San Luis Obispo County Child Abuse Prevention Council, believe in a connected community working together to ensure children are the highest priority, and may we remember to listen to and watch the children around us, to have patience, and to allow them the opportunity to enjoy the journey of childhood. Now, therefore, the Morro Bay City Council is proclaiming April 2014 as Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, and April 12, 2014 as Day of the Child. So it's an honor to present you this proclamation, and thank you for coming here. If you'd like to take a few moments to tell us a few words.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to honor Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month and all the work that's going on all year round to help our children and our community to have quality learning environments and just to protect them and give them the best that we can and keep them as our highest priority. I'm so glad that you shared that with that you received that award. That's amazing to see all of the work that's being done here. And thank you for being part of a countywide effort of what we're trying to do to increase quality in our children's child care and to be able to help with child abuse prevention. I have some goodie bags for you guys. But thank you so much for taking this time. Good. Can I hand them out? Do you want to hand them?
Thank you, Rochelle. Thank you. The next proclamation is for Bike Month, and that would be Amy Burton and Robert Fuller Davis. Thank you, too, for coming. It's an honor as well. And tonight we have a proclamation that I'm honored to read to you and present. This is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay, California, declaring May 2014 as Bike Month, May 16, 2014 as Bike to Work Day, and May 7, 2014 as Bike to School Day. The City Council, the City of Morro Bay, California, whereas bicycle community is an effective means to reduce air pollution and conserve energy and promotes the livability of communities by reducing traffic, noise, and congestion. And whereas Bike Month 2014 is an inclusive request to people of all ages and abilities, whether veteran or novice, commuter or recreational rider, to ride bicycles to their destinations throughout San Luis Obispo County, and whereas rideshare will help businesses, organizations, and schools encourage and reward customers, students, and employees who commute by bicycle through incentives, awards, lockers, and other benefits, and whereas bicycle transportation is an integral part of the multimodal transportation system planned by federal, state, regional, and local transportation agencies. And whereas Bicycle Month promotes such as Bike to Work Day, Bike to School Day, and Bike Month I Rideshare challenges encourages citizens to ride their bicycles, thereby reducing vehicular emissions in the county. And whereas the executive challenges creates a forum for leaders, business executives, management, directors, city council members, mayors, and
board. And physical health. Unfortunately, we will be celebrating Bike to School Day on May 8th at Del Mar Elementary School. We have something going on the 7th, so we've adjusted that date by one day. Our goal is to work toward creating sustainable change in our youth. Thank you for joining our celebration last year, Mayor Irons and Chief of Police Amy Christie. We'd like to extend an invitation to you and all of City Council to join us again this year and enjoy a fresh fruit smoothie with all our elementary school riders. Need a bike tune-up or a new bike? Go see Dave at the Bike Shop, our local bike store right here on Main Street in Morro Bay. Need a bike map? Take a look at Morro Bay's locally created and designed bike route map. Pick one up at the Chamber, Visitor Center, the Bike Shop, and all of Morro Bay's public buildings. Interested in getting involved on a local level? I encourage you to join the Morro Bay Citizens Bike Committee. It's a small group of people who are dedicated to the advocacy and creation of an efficient, interconnected network of safe, scenic byways right here in Morro Bay. We meet quarterly at the Morro Bay Community Center. Mark your calendar. Our next meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, May 6th from 5 to 6 p.m. Lastly, pick up a copy of the April-May edition of Slow Life for a full list of bike events throughout the county or go online to rideshare.org. Pedal on, Morro Bay.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I want to invite everyone to a community bike ride on May the 10th. We're going to tour some of the city parks as part of the Morro Bay 50th anniversary celebration. We'll begin at Del Mar Park Saturday, May 10th at 9:30. We're going to tour four parks in all. We'll go to North Point, the Cloisters, and Lila Kaiser. It's all interconnected with our beautiful Class 1 bike path. At each park, we will have someone there to talk about the park and some of the amenities. We have local people who have adopted our parks. So everyone, you're welcome to come. We're also going to have a trolley with limited seating if you forget to bring your bike. 9:30, May 10th, Del Mar Park. Thank you very much.
And tonight is the night of proclamations. We have one more proclamation, and that is Autism Month, Mr. Mark Machala. Hey, Mark. How's it going?
Good to see you again.
Here we go. Okay. So, pardon me?
Two pages.
Oh, two pages. Thanks for reminding me, Mark. It's an honor to read this and present this proclamation to you. Proclamation of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay declaring April 2014 as Autism Awareness Month. Whereas autism is a complex neurobiological disorder that typically lasts throughout a person's lifetime, it is a part of a group of disorders known as autism spectrum disorders, or ASDs. And whereas autism affects all persons regardless of race, religion, socioeconomic status, or geography. And whereas the incident of autism in San Luis Obispo County reflects the national rate of 1 in 88, with rates appearing to have increased similarly around the globe. And whereas a child is diagnosed with autism every 20 minutes. And whereas ASDs are the fastest growing serious developmental disability, making these disorders more common than pediatric cancer, diabetes, and AIDS combined. And whereas many are not adequately informed about ASDs and the value and importance of early identification, assessment, and treatment of these disorders. Whereas individuals with ASDs and their families face tremendous and overwhelming challenges in assessing and navigating the complex programs and services for these disorders. And whereas parents and family members have made invaluable contributions through their commitment, caring, and advocacy to important advances in research, education, and treatment for individuals with ASDs. And whereas individuals with ASDs are valuable and talented citizens. And whereas the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center will celebrate Autism Awareness Month in April 2014. And whereas the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center will celebrate Autism Awareness Month at the Walk for Autism and Autism Awareness Fair on May 4th, 2014 in Mission Plaza. And whereas Autism Awareness Month and the Walk for Autism and Autism Awareness Fair help to increase and develop knowledge of autism and are of paramount importance in creating an empathetic and compassionate citizenry. Now, therefore, the Council of the City of Morro Bay does hereby proclaim as follows. The Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center, in cooperation with the City, affirms its commitment to the important issues described in this resolution by declaring April 2014 as Autism Awareness Month in San Luis Obispo, and emphasizes that each and every individual with an ASD is a valued and important member of our society. And the City recognizes and commends the talents, abilities, and contribution of individuals in our community diagnosed with ASDs. And the City recognizes and commends the parents and relatives of individuals with ASDs, the professionals that provide valued services, and the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center for their sacrifice and dedication in providing the special needs of individual ASDs. It's my honor to present you this proclamation, Mr. Mark Machala.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right. I think I can joke with you about that, huh?
No,
all
know.
Right. All right, thanks.
So I know we want to get to public comment, but I've got a few items to paraphrase. First of all, I'd like to thank the community of Morro Bay. The proclamations that come from the council and the mayor reflect the feelings of the city and the people who live here in the community of Morro Bay. So thank you very much. The most recent I see families watch the world blossom where they never thought they would see that. From grandparents to just neighbors, it's an amazing thing that happens here in our community. So thank you for your support.
Mark, thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. It's amazing to see you.
All right, thanks, Mark. And we'll look forward to seeing you next year.
See you on May 4th, Mr. Mayor.
All right, we'll see you on May 4th then. Former coworker, so we get to see each other once a year this way. So thanks for coming, Mark. I appreciate it. At this point, let me reset where we are on our agenda. And at this time, we can move on to public comment. This is a time for public comment for all items not on the agenda. And for those people who can't stay later in the evening and want to speak to something later on the agenda, you may do so now. You have 3 minutes. Please state your name. And come forward. Thank you.
My name is Zan O'Brien. This didn't seem to be working very well. Anyways, I live at 310 Kern Avenue. I am a melanoma and two-time brain tumor survivor, and I'm severely cognitively impaired. So I'm going to read as much as excerpts from an article in the Bay News April 17th issue by Neil Farrell called Trouble with the Trees. The city of Morro Bay has finished work on an urban forest management plan, laying out strategies for taking care of its thousands of street trees. But there is also one aspect that could spell a major change to how the city manages street trees in residential areas as it contemplates turning all responsibility and expense for maintenance and all liability over to adjacent property owners. And while many residents might welcome the chance to care for a 100-foot tree, at least one local woman is stuck in a nightmare as she pleads with the city to remove a huge pine tree that is damaging her front yard. Ann O'Brien, who lives at 310 Kern Avenue, has an 80-foot Monterey pine tree, number 1824, that sits in the city's road right-of-way but straddles the property line between her and her neighbor. O'Brien has been trying since 2012 to have the city remove the tree, which she blames for destroying her property. As I said, I'm going to excerpt this because it's a nice long article and it will be available on the newsstands again tomorrow. Okay. Some people really like these big trees. That's my aside. But for O'Brien, who says she's a skin cancer and two-time brain cancer survivor, number 1824 is anything but a thing of beauty. She and her son, Brian Schweimer, have been sending letters to the city since summer of 2012 describing the damage being done to their property. The city of Morro Bay has a serious hazard and liability with Monterey pine tree number 1824, Schweimer said in a letter addressed to the mayor dated November 5, 2013. I respectfully request its removal, assessment and payment of damages, required repairs, and approval of permits for repairs in regards to tree 1824. O'Brien told the Bay News that she hired a local contractor to give her an estimate that came back at $27,000. Last October, they hired Arbor First to make an assessment of the tree. The company turned in a 13-page report recommending the tree be removed. The city's response was to hire its own arborist, Greenvale Tree Company, which turned in a one-page, one-paragraph report that said they believed the tree could be saved by cabling its twin trunks together. Pretty useless.
Hi, Miss O'Brien.
It will be available on newsstands tomorrow, and you're going to cut me off, right?
With 3 minutes. And I would encourage you, longer information like this, I know you've already written letters and stuff, I'd encourage you to add that and write those concerns to us some more, okay?
I you can be sure I will.
Okay, thank you.
It's me or the tree.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Good evening. My name is Robert Davis. I want to invite everyone to the Friends of the Library book sale this Saturday from 10 to 2 at the Community Center. We will have thousands of used books, movies, and CDs for sale, most of them 50 cents. All of the funds from the sale go to support your library. This is going to be the last book sale.
Thank you, Nancy.
So, Mayor Irons and members of council.
Can you adjust your mic down, please? It's just for us and everybody. Yeah, that would be great. Thank you. Thank you.
My name is Cindy Batant. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. And I wanted to speak about the Morro Bay Neighborhood Watch Group. Morro Bay Watch is a nonprofit volunteer program that has been active within our community since 1982. This is a national concept that started back in the 60s. We have several active members currently with our Neighborhood Watch Group that have more than 20 years of active service with this group. And so it kind of puzzles me a little that a lot of the community doesn't know that this group exists. The group is trying to reinvigorate itself, and so one of the first steps we've taken is to create a new mission statement, and that is on the overhead basically that Morro Bay Neighborhood Watch is promoting neighborhood safety and crime prevention through community partnership with the Morro Bay Police Department. So, short and sweet. We can all be the eyes and ears of the Morro Bay Police Department and also for each other. Our Neighborhood Watch currently participates in several well-known local programs. The emergency vehicle show that just happened here a few weeks ago, I believe part of those proceeds of that show go to the Neighborhood Watch group. Last year, they held their first annual National Night Out in partnership with the police department. And there will be another one coming up on August 5th, location TBD. And then, of course, everyone knows about Caroling Cops. And I can say, having been involved with this group, that the Neighborhood Watch volunteers are really primary project managers for this local program. We're exploring new ways to reach out to the community and involve more of Morro Bay residents. In the past, there's been meetings held, both social and educational, creating phone trees, small neighborhood gatherings, things that are very traditional for Neighborhood Watch, but we're trying to look at new avenues. And so we have recently updated our website, and I've listed the new URL web address, which is mbneighbors.com. We also have a new email address that we can be contacted at. On the new site, we're streaming social media. We have some streaming Twitter and Facebook feeds. And we're also promoting on that site a national social media site directed for neighborhoods called Nextdoor.com. We right now have over 150 members in aggregate on that site. So we invite people to come and join us. We have a meeting on the second Tuesday of every month at 11:30 at Dorn's Restaurant. You can email us, again, info@mbneighbors.com. On the website, it also has a way to register and make a direct comment to us. So, and then there's flyers in the back of the room.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Mayor and Council, Trina Doherty, Morro Bay resident. With my Eco Rotary Club of Morro Bay hat on this evening, I'd like to wish all of you a happy Earth Day. It is pretty amazing that 44 years ago in 1970, Earth Day was founded as an environmental teach-in, and it is now a global environmental event celebrated by more than a billion people around the world each year. I urge everyone to check out all the great local events around our county, as well as online activities, symposiums, and resources for all things eco. And speaking of events, tis the season here on the Central Coast. We in Eco Rotary would like to encourage all of you event planners out there, whether it be for small or large events, to make sure that all materials used are at the minimum recyclable and, if possible, compostable. The Eco Rotary Club of Morro Bay, in line with our mission and with enough advance notice, can provide zero waste services at your event. For larger events, our community partner, the Gorilla Gardening Club, is the group to contact. It is critical that you get the word out to all vendors that food containers, plates, cups, and the like are recyclable. Styrofoam is not and goes directly to the landfill for all of eternity. Please contact us for more information for our services by visiting our Facebook page, Eco Rotary Club of Morro Bay. We're hosting our second annual Greenlight Eco Fair this year on Sunday, June 1st from 12 to 5 at St. Timothy's here in Morro Bay. This is a benefit for Unite to Light solar reading lights, which are sent all over the world to those in need without electricity. This year, our goal is to send 150 lights to Pace Universal, a school for girls in India, founded by our past district governor, deepaugh@gmail.com, if you're interested. Again, the Greenlight Eco Fair, hosted by Eco Rotary Club of Morro Bay, will take place Sunday, June 1st, from 12 to 5 at St. Timothy's. So, see you there.
Nice job.
Thanks.
Trina. Wow. Welcome.
Wow. Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff, and friends at home. My name is Keith Taylor, resident of Morro Bay and a friend of the Morro Bay Fire Department. The chief sort of touched on it, but the Friends would like to cordially invite everyone to the open house. And when I heard Red speak about the library, Friends of the Library, from 10 to 2, so you could go get your books, and then from 2 to 5, you could come over to the fire department and, you know, see all the demonstrations and that. And this is the first time we, the Friends, have tried a membership drive. So I hope that everyone comes. I said, mainly because the Friends, over the years, we started in 204, and we were able to get funds, and everybody worked really hard. And the community helped us pass Measure Q so we could get money to pay for the fire department. We got a grant. Everybody knows about that. But there were almost all the people in our town supported our efforts, and I want to thank them for that. But we need to continue on because we have to keep educating our firefighters, and we give them scholarships to help them because it's sort of expensive when you go to paramedic school and the fire academy. So it's really a good thing, and I invite everyone to come. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Keith.
Good evening, Mayor Irons and members of the council. My name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here tonight on behalf of Verges Fishing. This council took action just shy of a year ago, May 14, 2013, to distribute requests for proposals for three vacant lease sites on the Embarcadero. These lease sites were identified by the Harbor Department staff as being candidates for possible development and revenue generation to augment the harbor budget. As you are aware, Verges submitted their proposal for lease sites 107W and 108W to the city before the August 15th deadline, and they were the only proposer for this lease site. Verges' proposal has been presented to the Harbor Advisory Board and has also been to the council twice, with the most recent hearing on February 25th. Verges has invested a significant amount of time, money, and effort into this proposal so that they can move forward with a project to get their business back down on the Embarcadero where it belongs. Verges is probably the oldest business in Morro Bay, and they have done everything in their power to be viable despite the economy and another problems that have come their way over the past few years. I'm here tonight to express to you their frustration with the process and delays that have occurred. Verges needs to take action soon on a project that will give them a waterfront shop and an additional dock space. Since the council does not appear to be any closer to a decision on the request for proposal as it has been presented, Verges would like the council to consider an alternative. In the interim, while the council is reviewing the entire lease sites, Verges would like to propose that they be granted consent of landowner to submit for dock-only project. This dock project could be installed in the east-to-west configuration adjacent to the T-pier rather than the north-to-south as previously presented. Verges is also willing to accept a condition of approval that would remove the dock in the event the space is needed for the boat haul-out facility. We would respectfully request that the council place this as an item on the agenda as soon as possible so that Verges can make plans and determine what their future is. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Anybody else for public comment?
Oh, it's a little shiny. So, lesson to everyone, low-gloss paper. Hi, I'm Joan Solu. Thanks for taking my comment tonight. I'd like to speak to you regarding Morro Bay's 50th anniversary and our celebrations coming along this year. We're pleased to have partnered with several groups along the way so far this year, including the Emergency Vehicle Car Show. I hope that you all got out there to see the 1964 vehicle that was on display, a replica Morro Bay Police Patrol vehicle. Additionally, coming up very shortly, you heard about our free 50th celebration bike park tour coming up on May 10th. This is an exciting tour that we encourage everyone to participate in. Don't worry, there's going to be a lot of riders that might be first time, too. Additionally, we have many fun events that we're working with and inside of this year, including the Music Festival, the Harbor Festival, the Kite Festival. We're working to partner with those groups. The Historic Society of Morro Bay is offering free membership to all businesses, residents, and visitors this year. You can go on the Morro Bay 50th website to join the Historic Society for free. Now I'm switching gears. I'd like to speak to you regarding C1 as a resident and as the president of the Morro Bay Community Foundation. The Morro Bay Community Foundation provides youth sports scholarships, and we partner with the city to sell the trolley advertising on all of your trolleys in your community. The trolley route, if it were to go up and back on Highway 1, would significantly limit exposure for businesses and would totally eliminate Spencer's and several other restaurants that advertise on the trolley, and that would impact your general fund, and it would also significantly impact the amount of scholarships that we could provide for youth sports. We respectfully ask that you change the trolley route to go up and back on Main Street so that we can actually sell the trolley advertising on both sides of the trolley instead of just on one side, or if it goes up and back on Highway 1, we may not be able to sell it at all. We appreciate your partnership and your consideration.
Thank you. Public comment is open. Please come forward. State your name. You have 3 minutes.
Greetings. My name is Dawn Beatty, and I live in Morro Bay. Last night, city representatives, including you, Mr. Mayor, met with Cloisters homeowners in the most recent of many such meetings to discuss issues regarding the Cloisters Assessment District. Thanks to Councilmember Christine Johnson, we are finally receiving financial information. Due to the fact that we homeowners only learned last December that the Assessment District has a debt on paper of $66,000, that must be resolved, we were unable to move forward on any issues unrelated to financial data. I would like to request that the engineer's report that is currently being developed zero out this paper debt, as one, we homeowners were unaware of financial decisions being made with our money that created this phantom debt, and two, if we hope to move forward, we need to start from a place where we are not burdened by decisions from the past. Thank you.
Thank you, Don.
Hello, Mayor and Council. I was up earlier to talk about Mind Gym as the business of the town for the night, but I failed to give our phone number or website. So our phone number is 805-286-6841, and our website address is www.classical-tutors.com. Thank you.
Thanks for coming back and doing that. Thank you.
Good evening, Council. Carla Wixom. Before I came to the meeting tonight, I happened to read my emails, and on there I saw the city website notice. I was quite taken back when I read that the budget workshop is not planned till June 5th, after the election. The budget workshops traditionally have been held in May, which has allowed plenty of opportunity for community participation and transparency, something that we all keep touting. Holding a budget workshop in June with such short notice of time to make changes for staff to address budgetary issues will be challenging at best. I was evaluating the year-to-date budget information that I've been able to receive, and it appears that there are budget shortages. It makes me wonder why we are having the budget workshop after the election and not before. What is it you don't want us to know?
Thank you, Carla.
Hi, Mr. Mayor, City Council. My name is Paul Nagy, and I just wanted to make a couple of brief comments regarding your D2 item tonight. First of all, I'd just like to say that if the City Council passes a resolution changing the permit process regarding water retrofits and fees, that it would be unfair to include applicants who are already in the permit process. You know, applicants have already spent their time and money based on the current requirements, and the planning department's been shorthanded. So in the past few months, it's taken quite a lot longer for the process.
Aloha, Mr. Mayor, council members, staff. My name is Kurt Harriman. I'm the director of cameras for Surfline. We have a proposal for a webcam out on the restroom by the rock. I'm here to address any concerns you may have regarding that webcam agreement license. I come to you all the way from my home in Hawaii just to make sure that I can address any concerns you may have or anything like that. So if you have any questions regarding the proposal or anything, please fire away.
Thank you. We'll take that one if it gets pulled. So thanks for coming, and we'll have you come forward if we have any questions at that time if we pull the item.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any more public comment for consent? Seeing none. Oh, here we go.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is Roger Ewing, Morro Bay citizen, and I'm here to address item A7, the approval of a map on the subdivision property just west of Casa de Flores. I drove that little road this morning and was surprised. I have a number of issues with this project. I was surprised that all the curbs are painted red, so there is no parking. The street, I think, is less than 20 feet wide because I don't believe two cars could pass together at one time. A few of the lots are about 6 feet in distance where it's flat, and then a steep drop down to what I believe is an escha. I could be wrong. It's where a lot of shrubbery is, and water does seem to go through there occasionally. Guest parking, I don't know where. 10 homes are going to have the space to park guest parking. When this project was approved quite a few years ago, one of the mitigating factors was the developer in partnership, I believe, with Casa de Flores promised to construct a 24-unit workforce housing complex behind Casa de Flores at the northeast corner. That apparently has not been done. I don't know why. He was granted the right to, the developer was granted the right to put in these 10 lots, but I don't see the workforce housing. The project was also to pay its fair share for the upgrade of the lift station at Quintana and South Bay Boulevard. I don't know whether, since they haven't done the 24-unit housing, I'm wondering whether they've done that as well. I frankly don't know how it got approved. It's amazing that a 10-unit subdivision seems to be ignoring our general plan. Adequate parking, wide streets, etc. So I would urge you, please, continue this item, pull it, and do a bit of research, because most of staff in the Public Works Department weren't here when this was approved. And I don't think they're familiar with the history. And I would hate to think that this developer is getting away with ignoring our general plan and not abiding by the agreement that he made when this project was first approved. So I thank you for listening, and I wish you a good meeting. Good night.
Thank you, Roger. Anybody else for public comment and consent? Seeing none, I'll close public comment for consent, bring it back to council. And I would pull item A7 for discussion. Anybody else for items to pull on consent?
A10.
Anybody else? Seeing none, can I have a motion to approve all items on the consent calendar with the exception of items A7 and A10?
So moved.
We have a motion by Christine. Do I have a second? Second by Noah. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Item A7. Rob, I recall this coming up for us once before, and some of these items, some of the questions were discussed as well as far as the size of the street and so on and so forth. So there's a list of things.
The issues brought up, the workforce housing in relationship to the subdivision. There were two separate projects not tied together. They came forward at about the same time. But they were not related to each other, other than I believe the owner at least at one point in time may have owned both properties. The street was approved to be a narrow street there, and it is 20 feet wide, meets our minimum private street standards, and there's a condition in the subdivision so that parking for guests shall be provided within the building envelopes. These are custom lots, so there's not a design on each lot right now, so those lots will be developed as the property moves forward. The sewer fees have been paid. And let's see, what were the other questions? There is a drainage through the property, and those building envelopes that are on that side where that habitat area is have the building envelope is set back from the habitat area. Not sure if it's not designated as ash on our map, so but it is does have some habitat value to it, and there's been a mitigation plan prepared and approved for the disturbance of the site. There were some sensitive plant species in the grading area, and that has been mitigated by planting those plants elsewhere on the site. I believe I've answered those questions, and I'd be happy to address any more that council may have.
And as far as the subdivision, we're at the final, we're at the stage where we're approving the final subdivision yes. map. So it's gone through all the planning commission, all the review, all the first stages of subdivision map approval, and this is the final stage.
Right.
And so about how many times have we gone through this as far as?
This project started in June of 2005 with our subdivision review board, went to planning commission. I believe twice it went to Planning Commission. It was sent back for some redesign issues. It was approved by Planning Commission in 2007. It went to Council twice also, and it was approved by Council in April of 2009. And then due to other circumstances, it did take them a while to do those subdivision improvements. But the state made provisions for that in revisions to the Subdivision Map Act that gave statutorial extensions to maps. Maps can last, I'm not going to say forever, but for a long time due to the economic conditions. The governor and legislature granted very long extensions to maps. So this is typically a ministerial process. For the final approval of map, if they've met all their conditions. If they haven't met their conditions, that would be at the point which council would not approve the final map and give direction to staff to have them meet those conditions. I think I got that right.
And we've met all those conditions.
We've met all the conditions
okay.
of approval.
All right. Thank you for that. Any other questions?
I was just going to comment that I remember this project well from way back in my Planning Commission days, and it was vetted several times. I think we even got down to how the houses could look, what kind of designs would be acceptable, although every single house will still have to be approved, will have to go through the approval process, right?
Correct. And then they also have a internal review process, much like the Cloisters. They have a design guidelines that those houses need to meet. One example is for two-story houses that would be proposed there, the second story can only be 75% of the floor area of the first story. So they've incorporated things like that into their own. They've regulated themselves also through this process.
I think I even remember getting as detailed as talking about houses that look like Sea Ranch up on the North Coast, so that they blend in with the environment, and that the lots are kind of fluid, and we have to decide where they can. I mean, the space on the lot has to be decided still.
Yeah, I believe that's their goal, is that Sea Ranch look, so that it's organic with the. Right now, it's brand new. It's all the landscaping is brand new. The erosion control, the bark mulch is all brand new. It will weather into the hillside, and it does look a bit different in real life than it did on paper, but they all do.
Advertise the position with specific dates. I would suggest that we re-advertise the position again.
Okay, any other discussion for that? George, any discussion on re-advertising?
No, I think this happened one time before with one applicant, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I agree with Nancy.
Christine?
I guess we should remind ourselves, how long of a process has it been that we've been recruiting for a planning commission person? Mm-hmm. Well, we had one, and then is there a process? I think if we maybe had a review of what's happened, that would be good for me to address some of the other comments. Thanks.
Yeah, kind of funny you should ask. I have that right here. Just initially, we had our applications out for our positions that were going to be effective January 31st. So we first advertised in December 12th of 13, with a deadline of January 17th of 2014. We held those interviews on January 29th. We only had two applicants. One was unable to attend, had submitted a letter, so we could have voted then, but we only had one actual interviewee at the time. So there was a motion made, which I do have the minutes if you wanted me to do anything with those, but motion was made to re-advertise. We re-advertised on January 30th with a deadline to apply of February 28th. We held those interviews on March 11th. We did have five applicants. Interviews were held and appointed Gerald Lure to the vacant position. Later that night, Planning Commissioner Rick Grantham resigned as a result of some scheduling issues, so that left another vacancy. Staff was requested to re-advertise for that, which we did on March 20th, with a deadline to apply of April 11th. I also was asked to poll the remaining candidates for their interest. Of those that I polled, there were four. Two declined, one never responded, and one expressed their continued interest, and that was Mr. Sadowski. So that's where we stand tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
Noah, Nancy?
I'll comment that I think, to be consistent with our previous actions, when we did have one candidate and recognizing the importance of this commission, I think I would agree with Ms. Johnson, Nancy Johnson, that we should re-notice this and work to get some applicants that we can interview and appoint.
Okay, so we have, look like, three in favor of moving forward with re-noticing this. And Christine, did you voice your position on this?
I mean, I was curious how many times we advertised for the planning
commission. I feel the same way. I was thinking, we already noticed, we asked the people if they wanted to reapply, and we only got one left. So if we're going to re-notice it again, are we going to, we made a really good effort to get people to come out, and we did have a response, but on this third go-round, we didn't. So that's you know, obviously why it's on consent, because it got this, and the other part of that is it gives us the opportunity to explore what our alternatives are, which is what we're discussing right now. So it seems like we have some support to re-notice this and proceed with to re-notice the vacant position.
I'm just shocked at the lack of interest. We used to have like 12 people come up here. What's going on? I mean, it's just like nobody wants to serve on these things anymore. Where we used to have so many people that was really qualified, and it was hard to narrow it down. I felt bad for some of the people that we had to let not get in there. And now there just seems like there's something funny going on, and I don't know what it is. Very much a lack of interest. I don't get it.
Christine?
Well, I think, George, you make a good point. What I would say is, if you recall, too, last year we had so many people come out for the Public Works Advisory Board that we actually moved and expanded that board membership. So I think it's like anything, probably with involunteerism, there are peaks and valleys of people's interest, and certainly, you know, it seems like it changes every year, perhaps. But my other comment is, when does this position expire?
That's what I actually wanted to say, is this this position does expire January 31st, 2015. So we, at this point, it's much less than a year, and this position will then, we'd have to re-advertise for anyway.
So that would be the reason I would suggest, well, for me, I feel like we should pass it on consent this evening, because it is such a short term anyway. It's only until the end of January, and then...
The way it's playing out.
Just a question of Ms. Boucher. When I thought it was 2015, the end of 2015, right?
No, January 31st.
So we're talking... I'd still rather re-advertise, but...
Yeah, it's 9 months.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we have, it looks like, I can see where this is going. I would say we just go ahead and make a motion and get moving on this, because, you know, it seems like we have...
I can make a motion.
All right.
I would move that we approve A10, the appointment of the vacant Planning Commission seat.
I would second. So I have a motion by Christine to approve item A10, to approve the vacancy with the applicant as listed. And we have a second by Jamie. And any discussion?
I would just say that my vote is for the term is very short, and it seems to be no reason to continue the process.
Correct.
I also have talked to some people that actually got a little confused on it. There was one person that said that he would have applied.
Okay, thank you. Any other any comments?
I will comment that in listening to the conversation, it seems to me that the point about the short-term nature of this filling of an existing term is a pretty good one, and I know it is not it can be considered a handicap for the commission to be short at four members rather than the five, and that's, for me, something that's important to consider here and to make sure that we have a full planning commission. I find myself thinking that it would make sense to avoid kicking off another round of applications and then the process and continue the Planning Commission at that short number of seats. So, yeah, that's a very strong argument. And I think I would have to vote to move forward and appoint Mr. Sadowski.
I may very well end up regretting what I'm going to say right at this point, but Mr. Sadowski has been a very, very vocal person complaining about what we do, how our planning department works, how our JPA works. He's been an extremely critical person of our process, and I worry about having him on our planning commission.
I agree completely with that.
I appreciate your comments. I mean, the appointment is to be a reflection of this council, and I, you know, in the spirit of that, I mean, there, you make some points that I think are worth having the conversation with. But You know, we've already gone through this a couple times, and at this point, you make a point that do we want to extend this one more time, and this particular person doesn't reflect, you know, the appointment that you would like to make is what I'm getting out of that.
Well, no, he doesn't, but the last people who were appointed were not my choice either, yet there are not people who have severely criticized the way our city functions. They're people who've worked within our city process and structure.
And I'll remind, we did say that this is a very important position. It's, you know, it's not like some of the others. And putting somebody on there too that's going to rock the boat, well, it's up to you guys. Go ahead and do what you want to do.
No, he has some comments.
Yeah, but my last comment would be that in terms of the behavior and actions of our planning commissioners, those are clearly lined out, the expectations that we have for them. I know our staff will be involved with the meetings, and I, for one, and I'm pretty sure all of us watch those meetings, and if any of the planning commissioners were identified to not be carrying out the integrity and review respect that the applicants and the process deserves, then we would need to address that, and I'll trust that Mr. Sadowski will recognize that and be working to represent the city and the council well in that position. So we have a short period for that position, and of course that will come right back up for review and process to appoint that position again very quickly. So given that, I'd say let's move forward and see how it works and then make decisions from there.
Okay. We've had discussion. I'll call the motion, the vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries 3-2 in favor of consent approving Mr. Sadowski on the Planning Commission seat. That concludes our consent calendar. We'll be moving on to public hearings. Item B1, which is introduction and first reading of Ordinance 585, amendments to Title 17, zoning text amendment.
The process and the changes for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Livick. Good evening, Honorable Mayor and members of the council. Tonight's item before you is an introduction and first reading of Ordinance 585, which would make an amendment to Title 17 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code regarding the city's secondary unit ordinance. This item was brought before the City Council at its February 11th, 2014 meeting to consider and accept Planning Commission recommendations. Just to briefly go over and give you a little bit of background, it's been a couple of months. Briefly, the purpose of this amendment is to modify the current regulations the city has, and to comply with amendments to state law that were made in 2002, which is Government Code Section 65852. This law requires cities to set standards for the development of second dwelling units, with ministerial review, in an effort to increase the supply of affordable housing units while ensuring that those units remain compatible with the existing neighborhood. The proposed Ordinance 585 before you includes the content of Ordinance 576 and recommendations made by the Planning Commission in 2013. The Ordinance 585 does not prescribe minimum size standards for secondary units. The State Department of Housing and Community Development does not require that a community adopt a minimum size, except that they may not preclude at least an efficiency unit to be constructed in compliance with state health and safety code sections. And I'd also, staff would like to point out that nothing in this proposed amendment before you will affect or lessen the requirements of the city's certified local coastal plan or California Coastal Act in regards to the establishment of ministerial standards. Planning staff has been in contact with Coastal Commission staff regarding these proposed second unit changes because the zoning ordinance, as the implementation tool of the city's local coastal program, would require an LCP amendment upon adoption of the ordinance before you. The proposed amendments tonight would make modifications to the following sections of the city's zoning ordinance, city's zoning secondary unit regulations, which include definitions, zoning district tables, guest house, and secondary dwelling units.
Although the original comments received by Coastal Commission staff appeared minor in nature, the city did receive additional correspondence via email today regarding the allowance of secondary units in agriculturally zoned areas. So I created a few PowerPoint slides just to identify visually for the council and for the community the comments received by Coastal Commission, centered around a clarification regarding the permitting requirements for secondary units in residential and agriculturally zoned districts. To be consistent with the city's general plan and specifically land use element policy LU-48, Coastal Commission staff is requesting that the city modify the ordinance to remove the allowance of secondary units in ag-zoned properties, or if allowed, that secondary units only be allowed for persons actively engaged in agricultural production, such as farm laborers. And just to kind of point out where the city's ag zoning properties are, this is a close-up zoom of the city's zoning map. And we have two large areas within city limits that are zoned ag. And you'll see them on the east side of the city limits. It's light green with, I don't think my red dot's working, but it's the, as you can see, it's marked AG, and it's light green with the red, the black dots. Currently, second units are allowed with a minor use permit in ag-zoned areas, but Coastal Commission is requesting that the city analyze whether such second units continue to be appropriate in the rural agricultural periphery of the city. And that is their language in the letter. Okay. In addition to the Coastal Commission comment letter received, staff is recommending that three other minor modifications be considered by the council. There are three areas. The proposed sections currently the sentence reads, lot coverage, maximum lot coverage allowed for the district that they are located in. And this was actually a comment that Coastal Commission staff had sent to planning staff a few weeks ago in an email. They were requesting that the city modify the sentence to increase clarity. Staff is just recommending a minor grammatical modification to state that it be rephrased to say maximum lot coverage shall be as allowed for the zoning district in which they are located. And the sentence that you see on the screen is the grammatically correct sentence. Secondly, the is regard to size. The total floor area shall not exceed the lesser of 900 square feet as per state guidelines, or 50% of the square footage of the existing single-family dwelling, which is consistent with Planning Commission's Council's consideration of the proposed modifications before you to Ordinance 585, and as is consistent with the Planning Commission's recommendations of requiring that a conditional use permit be required for units that are greater than 900 square feet in size, and their second recommendation that for second units where more than one parking spot is triggered, that a tandem parking be allowed pursuant to a conditional use permit. Staff is recommending that the City Council reopen the public hearing and receive testimony, accept the Planning Commission's recommendations for modifications to Title 17, waive reading of Ordinance 585 in its entirety, and introduce for first reading by number and title only, and then direct staff to submit a local coastal program amendment to Coastal Commission. And then with that, I am available to answer any questions.
Thank you. With that, any questions for Ms. Jacinth to my left? George? Christine?
Yes, thanks. Thanks very much for the work. And we've got back and forth today and with the Coastal Commission. We appreciate you making those adjustments, getting that out to the public and to the council for this evening. So you may have already answered this in your presentation. Is there any downside to including coastal recommendations tonight into our ordinances, into this ordinance, that you could see? Well, let's put it this way. Is there a downside to including the coastal recommendations at this point?
The only downside would be that, of course, to accept Coastal Commission's recommendations would be that secondary dwelling units not be allowed in agriculturally zoned areas. The caveat is that a secondary dwelling unit could still be allowed if it was expressly designated for farm laborers. But because the city has a limited supply of ag zone districts. When we consider the intent to comply with the State Department of Housing's requirements to increase the supply of affordable housing, the city does have sufficient land to meet that requirement and to adopt an ordinance that is consistent with this state government code section.
Okay, so it's not a game changer for Morro Bay in this case?
Not in planning, the planning staff's recommendation.
Okay.
There is an upside to accepting their recommendations, and that greatly increases the likelihood that it will be approved by the Coastal Commission and we can actually implement the desired changes.
Okay, that's my questions. Thank you.
Any questions to my right? Nancy? Noah? No. With that, we'll open it up for public comment. Anybody would like to speak to item B1, introduction of first reading ordinance 585, which was the second amending the secondary unit ordinance, may do so now. Please come forward. You have 3 minutes. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to council. And I'll start off to my right. Nancy, discussion? Seeing no discussion. Noah?
Yeah, I'm glad that we took some time to work with Coastal on this because, Mr. Livick, your point about making sure that we're going to be successful in the process is a good one. I find myself thinking how much existing residential units are currently located within the ag area as a curiosity, because I think that's an important thing to consider with this. From the map, it doesn't look like there's many numbers there, but it was something that I think was worth looking at. Overall, though, I think the intent of the general plan and really what we should stand by is protecting ag space, and it's good to know that we have enough space outside of the ag areas to accommodate the units that we need to within the city limits. So I think I'm in support of moving forward with adjusting as the Coastal Commission has requested and Planning Commission has reviewed and approved, and moving forward there. But if you wanted to respond to that, an estimate, it doesn't look like much is there of existing.
To my knowledge, we have a few residential units. Just in my own experience in the Planning Division, I have yet to see an application come forward for new residential development in the ag area. I don't have numbers to say what perhaps the permitting experience has been over, you know, the last, say, 10 years. But it's mostly, you know, the ag-zoned areas. It's just primarily, you know, the agricultural.
Okay. Thanks for that. Mr. Livick, did you have anything else?
I think I see perhaps one on Google Earth in the area by Little Morro Creek, but I don't have the city limits on Google Earth, so it could be just outside the city limits as it cuts across there. But there's potentially at least one in the ag area.
Okay, well, we had surf line.
Dialogue with Coastal Commission, as you said, Mr. Livick, you know, as we move forward in this, that just means it's we're setting ourselves up for a good collaborative relationship between Coastal Commission and the city as we move forward on things like this. We're getting it done ahead of time instead of having to send it out and come back and make some adjustments due to maybe inconsistencies with the Coastal Act or our own general plan. So I think the points were well taken from the Coastal Commission. And I just wanted to speak in. And I think the changes that we've made through this, our Planning Commission, and going through this, it's you know, very well thought out. It's thoughtful and keeping that, ensuring that our residential neighborhoods maintain that residential feel, and that we don't start converting some of those residential neighborhoods into more of a multifamily neighborhood. So I think these adjustments to the amendment, I think, keep that in mind and address that. And so, I'm in favor of moving forward with this, with the recommendations that staff presented for us tonight. I'd take a motion to move forward on this. If anybody would like to craft that out. If not, Mr. Pannoni, do you have any comments on this?
After the motion is made, we'll need to remember to read the title of the ordinance into the record.
Say again, I can't.
We'll need to read the title of the ordinance into the record.
Okay, so we can make a motion to do that, and you can read the title. I would, you know, have you read the title for the ordinance. Okay. So, are you going to do a motion?
I'm just suggesting if that screen is holding some information that could be used.
I would just point out that I did the PowerPoint slide so quickly that it should say. Introduction and first reading of Ordinance 585 as modified, because staff offered some minor little tweaks in our presentation. So I would just say, remember
okay.
that.
Are you okay with that, or do you want me to go ahead?
Oh, no, if it's comfortable okay. for everyone, I would just read from the screen.
That sounds good.
Okay, so then I would move that the council, I would move the staff recommendation to introduce the first reading of Ordinance 585 as modified, which thereby would approve zoning text amendment number A00-013 with direction to staff to forward an LCP amendment to the California Coastal Commission.
And I would second that. And we're gonna make another motion to...
Don't need a motion. I'm just going to read the title. We don't need another motion. Just going to read the
good.
Title. Just
for so we have a motion and a second. Motion by Christine, second by Jamie. Any other discussion? We're all good. All in favor,
Say... And so the title of the ordinance is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay, California, announcing findings and adopting amendments to Title 17 of the Municipal Code to establish provisions for ministerial review of secondary dwelling units and guest homes in, this is all zones, in the residential zones where single-family homes are a permitted use.
All right. Thank you. And with that, we'll take a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Great. Thank you, Ms. Jason. And with that, we're doing pretty good on time. If we want to just go ahead and move on to item C1, we can keep moving on that. So item C1 is consideration of North Coast Transit Survey Project recommendations for the 2014 trolley season regarding the North Route and fares. And Ms. Burlingame, that was pretty amazing. You just kind of showed up just as this happened. So that was pretty good. Thank you.
Thank you and good evening. Tonight you have before you a couple of recommendations from the North Coast Transit Survey Project that the Council of Governments had performed during the last year of all of the transit services on the North Coast, which included our Morro Bay Trolley as well as our Morro Bay Transit. And they related that basically in two categories, one related to fares and the other related to some changes or modifications to consider for the north route. Currently, that headway is about 40 to 45 minutes, and a couple of their recommendations were to consider either making the headway shortened to a half an hour or lengthening it to an hour, and to consider, while keeping the connection point at Market and Morro Bay Boulevard, to eliminate the city park stop. So there were some other recommendations, but those were more operational in nature, like making sure that signage that you have on your vehicles and in the brochures and on the website and stuff is all consistent and the same. And those are issues that we are handling internally and have had conversations with our transit manager from MV about how we're going to handle those for the upcoming season to take care of the issues that were raised within those recommendations, shorter to a half an hour. In discussions with the transit provider and the drivers, the city park stop is not recommended to be eliminated from the north route, and that's because a lot of the members of the north route, those coming from the campground at Morro Strand and those coming from the travel trailer parks along Atascadero Road, actually get off at the city park stop and then go over to Albertsons. When asked if they noticed whether these the riders from these locations, whether they got on or off along North Main Street, because there is Spencer's Market in that area as well as some other businesses and restaurants, their response was there's not very many of those riders from those locations getting off and on along North Main Street. So the other factor was the survey boarding and the lighting surveys that the North Coast Transit survey project did, and they kind of confirmed some of that anecdotal driver comments along the North Main route in terms of there were basically no people getting on or off the North Main route during their survey period. And admittedly, that was a shortened period of time. We do have some individuals who get on and off there, but that's more related to some local individuals who utilize the service. So what staff is recommending is to shorten the what we did is we talked about if we continue to keep the City Park stop, we continue obviously to keep the transfer connection at Market and Morro Bay Boulevard. What other ways, are there other ways that we can do to shorten the headway to a half an hour? This would increase your amount of loops that you're able to make in a day, which would have a small impact to your ridership because you'd be able to do a few more loops within the day than if you had the hourly headway. And that would have an impact on ridership and it would have an impact on fares. And the only thing, there's really no stops that could be deleted along the route. And really the only suggestion that had come up was to drive instead of up North Main Street once it leaves the downtown to run along the highway to get to Morro Strand. And that would shorten it enough to where you would get in that half-hour headway. And I know there was a recommendation by a person from who was making a public comment earlier tonight about considering to actually on the southbound loop coming back along Main Street rather than on the highway. And to do that to provide a little bit more exposure to some of the advertisers who would be advertising on the trolley. And that's something that the council can consider. It should be noted that there would not be any opportunity to provide for stops along the south portion of Main Street as we're coming back into town, as there's no safe place for passengers to stand off on the side of the road. As it's a chain link fence that's separating the highway from Main Street, and it wouldn't be safe to have somebody flagging down the trolley from the other side of the road and crossing the street to get on. So there wouldn't be any opportunities for picking up additional passengers or dropping them off along the as you're heading, south back into town. But it does provide that additional exposure for some of the advertising. The north route historically has been kind of difficult to get advertisers on because everybody wants to be on the waterfront route, and then the downtown route is the second choice. So I think the foundation's been trying to do a good job with getting businesses to kind of buy on all three routes, and so that may impact their ability to do that. So it's kind of a balancing act of, do you sacrifice maybe some advertising dollars which go towards your operating costs or sacrificing some of your potential ridership by shortening the number of trip loops within an operating day that also go towards your fare box? So you can consider both of those tonight. Staff is recommending the shortening to the half hour by going up north, up the north section of it along the highway, but both options would be considered. And doing both the north and the south along Main Street, you would be able to extend that to about an hour long. The other recommendation that came from the North Coast Transit Survey Project was to consider changing the fare structure to basically eliminate the adult $1.25 fare and the young child 50-cent fare and replacing that with a $1 fare. During the surveying project from last year, it was noted that there were some people who were commenting that it was kind of hard to get through all trolley season. And that affects the amount of loops that you can do in an operating day, which would impact your ridership and therefore some additional fares for your revenue. So staff, when we were starting to put together budget information for 14-15 fiscal year, we looked at what kind of impact there might be by having the dollar fare versus the rate structure that it is right now. And given some of the other changes to the north route, if the recommendation for the reduced headway to a half hour and traveling north along the highway is adopted by the council, and some of those other changes more internally, operationally, for more marketing, more intense marketing of the hotelier free ride program, making sure that all the hotels are visited more than just once at the beginning of the season to get a little bit more awareness out there for those who are checking in patrons and making sure they know that there's a trolley that we have available and to check it out. So by doing some of those other things, that we felt that there wouldn't be too much of a negative impact to fares by changing it back to a dollar. If council does consider and adopts doing an hour headway, there would be a slight impact to ridership and therefore the fares because of that, because you're going to have maybe a couple of less loops within the operating day, and not having the time to be able to go through the numbers. I don't think it would be too much of a change in the impact to create an issue for the fare box ratio requirement that we need to have by the state. So with that, what I'd like to do is turn it over to the council for any comments, questions, and a recommendation for these two changes.
Thank you for that thorough staff report. Janine, thank you. Appreciate it. Any questions for staff? I'll start with my right here. Nancy, you want to start off?
While I have several comments, I'll save for later. I do have just one question right now. Do you still go down Highway 41 to the Dunes RV Park and then stop at those one or more of those small ones in there?
Yes. We stop on both sides of the road as we do the loop back around.
Thank you.
Noah?
Yeah, thank you. A couple of other questions regarding mostly the North Main connection and the you know, the discussion that you alluded to and that was commented during the public. So with the idea of reducing that to a half hour to connect more easily with the downtown and Embarcadero loop and sync those, going to an hour would still sync those just less frequently for the North Main.
Correct.
Okay. And the idea I'm curious about would be in terms of if we wanted to try to achieve that sync, which is important, and still retain the North Main service. Are there? What do you think would be the impacts of either cutting out? And you talked about this a little bit. The City Park connection and allowing the downtown loop to satisfy that need. So a rider would take the North Main to the market area, transfer to the downtown loop, and then get up to the City Park that way. As one option, or the other was, well, actually, why don't you start with that, and we'll go from there.
I don't know. Susan McDonnell was going to be here tonight. Actually, she is. I don't know if she's got some kind of more clarification on timing. If you're coming back into town and deleting, just driving over to the City Park stop and back, whether that would provide 10 to 15 minutes to have that ability to shorten the headway. So
yeah.
I don't know that there would be enough time saved by eliminating that stop to then be able to shorten the headway, continue up and back along Main Street. The other, having the downtown route provide that, the downtown route already stops at City Park, so it would just be whether you would have individuals from Morrow Strand and the travel trailer parks along Atascadero Road and Morrow Dunes Trailer Park, whether that would be more of a burden for them and what impact that might have for those individuals who would then, they would now have to transfer or walk the distance up Morro Bay Boulevard to get to Albertsons to do their shopping, and then they would have to make that transfers back and forth. And if you're looking at, you know, potentially having it every other half hour rather than every half hour as the transfer, that may make it a little more difficult. And so I don't know exactly what the impact might be.
You have to remember that at the park, we have Art in the Park. And that's a real destination for a lot of people that come camping here. So we City Park's pretty important. So and we've tried this a couple different ways. And in order to get a half-hour loop, there was only one way, and that was going up the freeway. We could continue working on it, I suppose, but eliminating the park, we used to not have the park, and that's really a goal for people. It's also, there's three reasons. It's Albertsons, it's the Art in the Park, it's also the top of the hill for a lot of people that want to start there and work their way down Morro Bay Boulevard to shop.
And if you could, Susan, remind me whether the trolley actually stops at the stops on North Main currently or in last year's schedule, or is it a hailing situation where if they identify potential rider at one of the stops or someone that's signaling to them, that's when the stop and pickup occurs? Or is it every stop is a stop? And
there's actually signs, trolley signs, at Errol right now at Elena Street, so that's just past Spencer's, and at Jamaica Street.
So those stops are automatic?
Right.
Do you think if those stops were turned into a hailing requirements along with the rest of that section, would that help? I know Highway 1 is just a completely different story as far as time goes.
But one of the scenarios we tried was that last year, and we could get it to a 40-minute loop, which is, again, awkward, a 40-minute loop. That's the shortest we could shorten it to.
And it also should be noted that for those three stops where there's actual signage and a stop indicated in the route map, if the driver sees that there's nobody at the stop waiting and there's nobody that's indicated they're getting off, I think they just pass the stop. They don't stop there. So to turning those into flag stops wouldn't really make a difference as far as the timing issue.
Good questions. Any questions to my left? George, any?
Just one question. I think I asked this before, but I think I forgot. How much money is taken in by the fair?
Jenny?
Over your time?
For last season, it was about $13,000 prior. And that year was 2013 was down in terms of ridership and fares from the prior year. So it has probably been more in the $15,000, $16,000 range, more on an average.
From 13 to 15 and 16. Okay. Good enough.
Okay. Christine.
Thanks. And you know what I did is I went on to look at the actual trolley map, which it helped me look at exactly where the trolley is. And if anyone's interested, they can access that through the city website. So that's what I'm looking at now. So I do see what I'm concerned about is, my question is this. Have you done any outreach to any of the businesses on Main in North Morro Bay?
Other than probably those that have stop locations, I don't think there's been much.
Not really. I'd say the reason is we run Morro Bay Transit, except for Sunday. It's running every day that the trolley runs. So we go into the Spencer's front door.
So if you're a visitor in North Morro Bay renting a vacation home or however you're getting around, specifically thinking about the trolley season, as we've discussed previously at council meetings, that is our tourist ridership for the most part, and now especially if we've added some additional Saturday service for our Morro Bay Transit. So my question is, we are still, would a vacationer be aware of their option to take Morro Bay Transit or the trolley to get to destinations in North Morro Bay? Is there a way that the average visitor sees that option?
All of that information is on the website. So if you have somebody who's coming in and they're kind of more technical savvy and they're looking, they can find that information there. We also have that information at the We used to have it at the Chamber when they were doing both the tourism part. Now we just have it at, I believe, just the tourism.
At the visitor center.
And it's both the transit information as well as the trolley information. And something that Susan and I were talking about in these last couple of weeks is when she's getting ready to go out at the beginning of the trolley season to all the hotels and motels to bring them the brochures for that, to also bring our transit stuff, because that's during the week, and so when the trolley isn't running, we know. And the only overlapping of service between the services you have is on Saturdays during the day when, it would be 11 in the morning to, 4:25 is when the transit service stops. The trolley is still running until, 7 on Saturdays. And then Friday and Monday, there would be some overlap as well for particular areas. Morro Bay Transit, it's a deviated fixed route, so while it does run a lot of the same area that the trolley does, it has that capability of flexing off to do the call a ride trips. So that's something a little different.
Right.
So that's kind of an addition that the trolley service doesn't have with it just being a purely fixed route.
Okay, so you don't anticipate there would be that people in the north, businesses in North Morro Bay would feel, hey, what happened? They'd call me and say, the trolley used to come by my business and now I see it flying down Highway 1. Do you think that you would have it? Do you anticipate that might happen?
I would think that that might happen for some. To what extent, I don't know. When we have changed from one route to two and we were doing the north and the downtown routes, I think we've always gone north on Main Street. So I don't think we ever did south on Main when we started. I can't remember.
We've never gone south on Main because there's no stops. There's nowhere to.
Right.
And
most of the people that ride are going to the campgrounds.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you very much. That's
okay,
all.
Okay, thanks. And I just have one quick question before we open it up for public comment. So, based on the staff report and the recommendations, Susan, is there anything you would add or to the recommendations, or are you in agreement with what recommendations we have for this modification to the route?
I'm in agreement with it, yes.
Okay, all right. Thank you for your participation. At this time, I'll open up for public comment. For those who'd like to speak to item C1, which is consideration of North Coast Transit Survey Project recommendations for the 2014 trolley season regarding the North Route and fares. And please state your name. You have 3 minutes.
Yes, John Henning. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. President-elect of the Chamber of Commerce. We are in the process of trying to determine that exact information that Christine Johnson just brought up with regard to North businesses to find out what impact they may feel that will have on them. It should take us about 30 days to do that. We're going to try to hit every business, get input, find out what the implications may well be, what their concerns are, and bring that back to you at your next meeting. So we would ask that you postpone a decision on this until such time as we could intervene and bring that business information back to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else for public comment at this time?
Hello again. Don B. Morro Bay. I happen to ride the trolley, and I pick it up at San Jacinto and Highway 1, so I would not be a big fan of the southbound on Main Street because that way I couldn't pick it up.
Can you say that one more time for me, please, so I can hear that?
I ride the trolley, and I pick it up at San Jacinto and Main Street.
Okay.
Which is the part of the southbound route.
Right.
So if the trolley went south on Main Street, I wouldn't be able to get it.
Gotcha. Thank you for that comment.
Good evening, Council. Carla Wixom. I would echo Mr. Heading's comments and add that being mindful of the businesses out there, there are 6 restaurants and a grocery store out there that are dependent on the services provided by the city
regardless of being in the downtown area or North Morro Bay. If we're going to try to promote business, stopping there, you have two campgrounds in between, and they should be considered as part of this service that provides opportunities to that grocery store and those businesses. The dollar fare seems like a good way to go. It's been challenged back and forth, and it just seems like a simplest process to do and really the easiest, hopefully, to encourage ridership.
Thank you. Any other comments at this time? With that, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. And looking to my right for discussion.
Yeah, thank you. I did want to follow up on Ms. Beattie's question regarding San Jacinto on the southbound trip retained as part of the plan, regardless of, well, it doesn't sound like there's any sense in going southbound on Main, but if we're trying to achieve a half-hour headway, we could still retain that San Jacinto stop.
Well, that's San Jacinto
system. I just my gut tells me that removing the North Main route without at least some outreach and discussion mm-hmm. to the businesses, residents, and vacation opportunities, without that outreach is not going to be received well, and I think it's disrespectful to all of those entities. So I'm glad to hear the Chamber is pursuing some outreach there. I think that's very important. I also would think that it's important for us to let that process take place. I'd like to hear from Janine her thoughts on what that would mean for our timing. I don't see that would shake things up too much. It might crunch the timeline for scheduling a bit, but how would that affect you and the planning for the season?
I don't remember if the person who was commenting was talking about coming back in 30 days,
mm-hmm.
which would mean your second May meeting, and
that's right there, isn't
it? What the date for that's going to be?
That is really close. It's actually the day after Memorial Day. It's the 27th.
Okay.
So
because at that point we would have already had to have all the brochures redone, all of the route display cases done, you know, basically everything would have to be done and out.
Yeah.
And we could have that be as short as maybe 2 weeks prior to when trolley season would start. So if there was some way that outreach effort and information could get back in time for the council's first May meeting, that would probably be more doable if there was, you know, whichever change, whether it was to extend it to an hour and do north and south both along Main Street, or whether it was to shorten it at the half-hour headway.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is if we can return this, if that's supported, by the May 13th meeting with some more information and a chance to hear from the businesses and so forth that have been notified up there about this potential change and how that it would affect them, and look at some options more, that would give you just enough time to catch the opening of the season and not
because we could, presuming council makes a decision one way or another what they wanted to do with the restructuring of that route at that meeting, the very next day we could start working on all of the media production and changes for that. I do that basically in-house, so it's not like we're having to go out to have somebody do that. So that's where we could get a little bit of time savings
okay.
in that regard.
Do we need to check in over here with other staff who deal with our agenda making to hear how that might affect the next agenda?
Well, I'm looking at my calendar right here for a May 13th meeting, the very last possible time to get a staff report, get it copied and out for publication would be like the morning of May 8th. And yet at the same time, I know that our new attempted goal is to get things 2 weeks in advance of that, which I know in this case probably would be unrealistic. But, you know, I'm thinking that week of May 5, 6, 7 is more of a goal than, you know, May 13th really isn't the day. It's got to be at least that week before.
So May 8th would be the deadline for the information and the staff report to be developed.
If we close our eyes to our new goals, yes.
Yes. And in this case, I think given the crunch, I would recommend that we do make that exception here, because I can't support the idea of going forward without giving those businesses some notice and
opportunity
to comment. And I think, you know, at that point, hearing from them would help us weigh the decision of are we going to make that push for the half hour, or do we just push it out to an hour or some hybrid to make it work for everyone as best we can. Ms. Burlingame, do you think there'd be some ability from your end to interact with the chamber and their efforts and be a part of that outreach so that it's organized?
Certainly.
And okay, great. Well, hearing that, I think it's essential that we reach out there and hear from them. I'd like to see part of that outreach include information that we've expanded to Saturday service for the Morro Bay Transit. I think that would help those businesses, you know, understand how it may affect them and that there is a real viable other option on at least one weekend day. And I think you can slap my wrist if I'm getting out of line on this agenda item, Mr. Pannone, but I think it's also a good time for us to interact with the Chamber on the development of the mobile app and the inclusion of transit information to be included in there, whether it's the trolley or with the Morro Transit Service.
I take that was just a friendly suggestion, and now that we've
friendly
done,
suggestion.
Okay, so so just an observation.
I'll end there.
Yes.
Six restaurants right in that area. It just really bothers me that we're pushing a major food chain and ignoring our own local North Morro Bay businesses. I think it has to be more than a timing issue, and I would really appreciate it if the chamber could get us some more information so we could move forward with this. Just also, I want to say thank you for all the work you've done on the survey and the background, and I like the flat fee. I think just the dollar, I think we've talked about this for a couple of years, and it just makes good sense. The other thing that people have asked me, and I have to ask you because it really worries me too now that it was brought up, it is probably legal to drive that trolley on a freeway, Highway 1, but is it safe? I mean, that's a little lightweight vehicle with wooden seats and no seat belts. I would really like to see that addressed in a formal manner at some point. So I think hoping that we're going to extend this to our first May meeting, I think that's all I have for now.
Thanks, Nancy. George?
Well, I don't like to see that trolley on the freeway either. It kind of bothers me, but you know, there is so many. We talk about Albertsons now. Spencer's brought up. How about Crooked Crop? I mean, you could keep going on and on and on. I mean, how about the little stores down there? You know, these people probably have been doing this for a long time. They know better how it works. But again, I'm jumping back over to the fair thing. If you're going to drop this thing to a dollar. Of course, I'm always one trying to get more people on there and less money, but the children, I think you're going to end up getting less people because there are people standing there with one adult, an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old, and that's $3, right? So I like to see the thing drop down below 12, the age limit of 12. Under 12 rides free. That's what I like to see.
Christine.
Yes, thank you very much. Since we're speaking of fair, that's a great idea, George. I support the dollar, flat dollar fair, and I don't know what it would be in impact-wise, but you know, certainly a family of four, it would make a difference for them to ride. But if it's no matter how we go, I don't know if we need to discuss that a little bit more. So it's a nice new idea. But for the first question in the staff report about the fare structure changes, I would support a dollar and go with that recommendation with a little more discussion about that the age variation. What is it now, Janine?
5 and under ride for free,
And with the current fare structure, it's 50 cents for those who are over 5 to 12. And then okay. The adult fare is 12 to and up.
Okay. Okay, thank you. So it's 50 cents right now for kids, more or less, under
correct.
12 and under, or under 12?
Under 12.
Okay, so 11 and
5 and 12.
Okay. Okay. So that's my first comment, is to support the rate structure, and then I'd like to have some more discussion about that up here on George's idea to change the age for children who ride free and hear some staff feedback on that. Then I'm noticing on stop 11 on the north route, are we stopping at Main and Errol?
Yes.
Okay. And I don't know...
And that wouldn't change with either...
Right. That wouldn't change, right?
Headway.
So is part, I guess it sounds to me like part of the folks who are at the RV parks on Atascadero Road, they are the ones that are ending up having to ride all the way around and coming back on the way back.
Those who
the
are
RV
coming
park.
From Morrow Strand, the campground at the far north, and then those along Atascadero Road, the parks that are along there.
Correct. So if those folks who are staying at Morrow Dunes, for example,
mm-hmm.
if they get on the trolley, they've got a short ride in to town. But
and the return trip would...
That the return trip is to go all the way up to correct. The very end of our city limits and coming back.
Correct.
Okay. There is no indication, however, that they are... At least I'm looking at the map again online, everyone.
They could technically
walk.
Get off on Errol and walk.
Right. Not everybody can do that.
Correct.
But we don't even kind of give them that option, like, a little asterisk. So that they could walk, and that would shorten their ride on the way home if they're able to do that and they're not too loaded with packages they've just bought. So... but anyway, I'm just noticing that I wanted to confirm that there was still a stop at Errol and Main. Okay. What I'm definitely in agreement with this sentiment of the council about supporting the businesses in North Morro Bay. I also would say I think all business is important. So if we've obviously, let's go back to that another time. So I would support at this point not removing the trolley from the North Morro Bay route going north. My question is to you all, is this a rush item? Is this something that we have to find out by May? Or can we go through the summer and can we have our partner at the chamber and other businesses alert the folks what's going on? Is that an opportunity for North Morro Bay businesses to bump up their ridership and somehow get people to ride up there and use the service that's existing? And then would we have better data coming back at the end of the summer season, and then we're not putting pressure on staff to bring an item back. I don't know if it's a critical one to rush back or if we could do some thoughtful analysis over the summer and talk about it after Labor Day.
It is not a requirement to have something done and be ready for this season. The council certainly could keep the existing structure for the north route through the season and do as just you suggested, have more time to get that outreach and feedback back. We can even do a different type of survey than we normally do for that could just be exclusively for the north route or even on all of them that have questions that are a little more focused for areas of the north and travel and usage for those locations. And then come back with something either during the season but after the season that council could consider for 2015 season implementing some type of change.
Okay, thank you. That's great input.
Well.
Okay, so.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right, thanks. I think I'll finish first. Thanks, Nancy. At this point, I think there's support for the business outreach, which I would agree. But it's prompted a couple questions that I'll circle back to for Ms. Burlingame, and that we basically had this report come to us in March 11th of 2014, but we didn't necessarily have the recommendations that you're at this time for us to give you the feedback on. So I just want to cover that a little bit. So we've had some suggestions that maybe we're ignoring the business on Main Street, and I don't think we're necessarily doing that. It's just the process in which we have gone through in the analysis. Initially, this was a report from SLOCOG. We took that. It was introduced to council. And, to my recollection, there wasn't necessarily a lot of input or discussion on where we were going with that. We were going to come back with this particular report at that time. So I'm trying to, you know, inform, you know, the listeners on how this process is working, as well as perhaps, you know, we're at a point now where we're thinking, oh, are we going to continue this if, you know, for the outreach for our businesses to make sure we're going to include them in part of this and not exclude them from, you know, enhancing, you know, ridership in that area. So is that, that's pretty accurate. We really didn't get into the outreach stage at the first point of this staff report in March because it was just kind of a file and receive. We're going to work with this ahead of time and really didn't prompt much discussion on whether or not we need to be addressing some of the businesses in North Main.
And that, and we really have been going kind of on historical data and driver, what the drivers have seen over the years as far as North Main and the riders in that area, where they're coming from and where they're going to. Mm-hmm. We can certainly include more outreach to the businesses to see what kind of impact this may have for them if they notice that there are people that are coming from the trolleys, from tourists coming in that way, and get their input as to whether they feel that this would be a major burden to them, or maybe they have a suggestion for how to maybe tweak the route to get some of these things that we're trying to do, which is either to shorten the headway so that we can get more of those loops, those more consistent every half hour connections, or expanding to an hour, and how might that be done, and kind of balance out everything for the visitors who are coming in and where they're wanting to go, but also to kind of bring them over to see the businesses that we have in the north area and come up with something that might be more workable for both sides.
So given the amount of time that has been suggested on bringing this back, do you feel like you're going to have enough time to actually come up with a solution to bring back to council on this?
That would be my concern, would be having enough time, and I don't know if the gentleman from the chamber has already kind of started that outreach, but that takes some time after we've been able to do some surveying during the trolley season for those who are riding and doing that outreach to the businesses in the north part of Morro Bay, and coming back with something more in the fall for consideration and maybe reworking even as you head into the spring for the next season.
Okay. Nancy, you had some questions or comments?
First, I need, I guess, to ask Mr. Heading how long it's going to take them to get this information. If the chamber could have it by the end of the week or early next week, then the report could be done much sooner, but I don't know if that's feasible. Can we have Mr. Heading answer that question?
Mr. Heading, would you like to come up and respond?
I am one not to wait lengthy times and to move things forward. So if we can do that for you in a short period of time by, I believe you said the 8th, is that correct?
That's kind of pushing it, I think, is what they're telling us now.
Well, and I'm sorry, if I can just interrupt real quickly. The 8th would be when the reports would have to be due to the city clerk for packet production. So we would even have to back that up earlier for staff to be able to take the information and then come up with some sort of workable recommendations from that. That could and then write the staff report for that. So you're backing that 8th date even a little bit further than that.
That's what I'm thinking. And we're probably talking by the end of April, which is what,
that's
a week
8 days,
and a half?
Yeah, that's 8 days. And
yeah.
I don't know if you're going to get meaningful data in 8 days. That's my concern.
Okay, that's
my
question.
I'm all for moving fast, but I don't think you're going to get really good data in 8 days. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so that answers that question for me. I think then, rather than trying to move this to the May meeting, what I would recommend, I still have concerns about safety on the freeway, and I'm not the only one. I've heard it from other people. So I think that needs to be answered. I think most of us agree with the fair discussions that we've heard, even though we may want to change the age, which would be okay. I think really to honor and support our businesses on North Main Street, we need to run both north and south on Main, at least for this summer. If it doesn't work, if they're not using it, not stopping, I think that makes a difference. I think we can still go from the Strand down to San Jacinto and have a stop there and then go across to Main. I don't think you miss too many businesses if you do that. Maybe the buoy. Those people may need the ride more than anybody. But I really would like to see us do the best we can to help businesses on North Morro Bay on North Main, and at least have a stop at Spencer's and go back and forth on Main Street. That's my suggestion.
Okay. Any other discussion on that?
I think it's important to really take some time here to make sure we're taking advantage of what I think is an opportunity for the transit program, working with the chamber to work with the businesses in that district and identify how we could create a better relationship and hopefully increase their participation and their awareness and the ridership. So whatever we need to do to get there is worth that effort, and I think that will return a stronger route and program for us in that area, which is underutilized right now. I want to give Janine a chance just to comment on the concerns about the highway travel speeds of the trolley, because I think that's an important issue that you've raised, but one that if we shift that southern route to Main Street could create a pretty significant change overall in the program and the timing and so forth. So if you wanted to comment on that briefly.
As far as traveling along the highway, there's no state or federal law that prohibits transit vehicles from doing that. We have the large regional buses. We have had the trolley who's traveled along the south as they're heading back into the south along the highway without incident. These vehicles are kind of regulated by the CHP. They have annual CHP inspections. There's no state or federal laws requiring seatbelts to be provided on these types of vehicles or worn by public transit riders. So in that sense, it's for public transit, we don't look at it as drive route, whether it is to happen before the season starts or for something to look for next 2015 season.
Okay. Just to follow up then, so also with the 45-minute loop, if we were to say, let's just continue the North Main program as we did last year, work to establish a better understanding of that area in relationship with different businesses and so forth in that area, and come back next year, do you have any short-term recommendations as to whether that 45-minute cycle, should we at this point just push that to an hour and consider that? Or my thought would be keep the 45-minute cycle and the shorter time frame for the loop and then plan on future changes later.
As Susan had mentioned earlier, that last season we tried initially to start on an hourly headway, and it really dragged out the route. And for the individuals that are, they're at the campground, they're at the travel trailer parks, they're wanting to get into town quickly, and then they're wanting to get back where they're staying quickly. And to have these, as she mentioned, that some stops that they would sit there because you're having to wait in order to be able to make that hour headway, those individuals are getting a little fidgety and their riding experience is not a good one, and so there may be a tendency to not then want to ride it again. So I wouldn't necessarily suggest to keep the same route and travel pattern that we do, but just stretch that out to an hour. If the council is not wanting to do any sort of structural change at this point, wanting to come back with more information for the businesses, doing a survey of the existing riders for that area over the summer season, and come back with some additional or different recommendations. I would suggest that we keep the route and the structure and how it operates as is on that kind of 45-minute headway for this upcoming season, and not try to stretch that out another 15, 20 minutes.
Okay, and then my last question related to fare, because that might be something we decide on tonight. Do you, with George's suggestion of reducing or increasing the free ridership all the way up to under 12, and then reducing the adult ridership down to $1, do you see any, and I know that that might be challenging for you to just off the top of your head, do you see any major concerns with that, or would that be something we should try to pilot this year and see what
that happens? That would have a large impact on the fare box. The child fares right now, they're, I was before the meeting, I was kind of looking at the child, back when we used to have just the free and then the adult fare, which I think was from 12 and up, or 6 and up, to when we did that split to the 50 cent and a dollar. And right now with the 50 cent children fare, we have about 3,000, approximately, it fluctuates a little bit, but about 3,000 child riders in that category. So that would have an impact. To what percent, I don't know, but that's, you know, probably $1,500, and that's 10% almost of fares, and that can have a very negative impact to the fare box ratio.
Okay.
I'm not gonna. I was gonna kind of throw out the idea that if the city in the past, well, when it originally started with one route, had gotten sponsors for the operations, that enabled you to be able to have no fare, or I think it was a quarter when it started. So if there was some way to get sponsors of a large enough impact that would kind of offset that loss from providing children of a higher age to be allowed to ride for free, then that can go into the fare box towards that. And perhaps offset that. But that's something that would have to be pursued each year and have to happen each year. And what we started to notice with the ridership, the sponsorship when the trolley had started was we had like 4 major sponsors, and then over time those sponsors kind of dwindled up and went away. So I don't know whether there would be something along those lines that might be able to come about that would enable a certain ridership segment to be able to be free, or looking at all of the fares to be free, that kind of thing.
Okay. Thank you.
I have some questions on the fare. Actually, just for the sake of the fare box ratio and maybe some more time to gain some information on that, maybe it would be worthwhile to keep the suggested fare with them. SLOCOG's, the RTA's help, we can evaluate the age component of this next year along with the businesses, I think is where you're going with, or what council is going with on how we want to proceed with this. And you know, as far as comments from the rest of council, I'd just like to hear what the rest of the comments on council would be for that suggestion.
Well, I would make a motion to...
Well, I would like to say one thing first. That's one, she pointed out exactly what the fear I have of that trolley on the freeway. It is a slow-moving vehicle. And, boy, those cars come zipping down there. That's what really bothers me, is the slowness of it. Not that it gets up to big speed. I just want to correct that.
Okay, Christine?
I know. My car is really slow, too, George. I do think about it sometimes when I pull out. But I would move to approve the staff recommendation. Excuse me. I would move, if we want to move it on to the fare item, move to approve the staff recommendation fare change for the 2014 season. And they're recommending $1 across the board. So I could reword it and make it a little cleaner, or could I just say move to approve the staff recommendation fare change for the 2014 season?
That would be good.
Second.
I have a second on that. So we have, this is a motion for the fair only. And so basically motion is to approve the recommendation of the fair fair schedule for this 2014 schedule. And we have a second. Any discussion? George?
Well, I think they're going to find out they're going to have less people riding. But we'll have to see. I'm going to vote for the along with you guys on
okay.
this one.
Okay.
I will state for clarification, that's $1 for adults, retaining the existing fare, which is between 5 and 12, 50 cents.
No. Actually, I think that we can go to staff for clarification, but it's $1 for everyone. That's what the recommendation was.
I really think we're going to have a lot of... Lot
maybe
of
Janine.
Child fare.
Well,
no, actually, it is... so it's... Janine,
well,
do you
Janine
wanna,
let's let Janine tell
Janine,
us.
Do you want to?
On page or the it's three. Page three of your staff report, just above the conclusion, is the recommendation for the fare, and it is eliminating the $1.25 adult fare and the 50-cent child 5 to 12-year-old fares, and replacing those with the $1 fare. Mm. The free up to five. Fair or not fair, but the allowing children up to the age of 5 riding free would still be in effect. That wouldn't change.
Okay, thanks for that. I didn't read it that way, and I think that's a pretty significant cost for if you have a large group of kids.
Yeah.
When my nephews are in town, that's a big deal, particularly because you're hoping that you're staying multiple days, and the trolley should be a real fine option for them to just automatically go to and enjoy many rides on. So
I can restate my motion, perhaps?
Or well,
do
we
can
go
take
ahead
it back?
We can go ahead and vote.
Pull it
just go ahead and vote, and then we'll restate the motion. So at this point, if you want to vote.
Well, man, I think, though, can I say something?
Sure.
In discussion?
Yeah.
I am still in favor of the motion because I know I'm not a great mathematician here, but if you're talking two adults and two kids, it's a difference of 50 cents. And you're not having to make change. If you're one adult with two kids, it's all of 75 cents. So, I mean, if I bring my three grandchildren, I would just assume, I mean, they are old enough now, they ride the trolley by themselves. But it's easier just to let them each pay a dollar and go for it, I think. It's not a big difference between charging kids 50 cents and not. So... I'm still in favor of the motion.
Yeah, I would just, a quick discussion point. I think I remember the discussion from the previous time we had the item here. It was all, this is about efficiency and about people not riding it because they didn't have the change and making the change. So, I mean, we can always evaluate this at the end of the summer season, too. And if we made a mistake tonight, then I'm sure Janine will tell us.
Okay.
She'll tell us in a nice way.
Yeah. So we have the just to restate the motion. The motion is to go with staff recommendation on the 2014 fare of $1 for a straight rate state flat fee, except for children under 5 years would still ride for free. And that's the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No. Nope.
Motion carries 3-2. So we've nailed down the fair part. And so let's we have a motion. So now we have got to get on with the route itself.
I have a motion for that. Are you guys ready?
Sure.
Okay, I'll move that we retain the current route schedule and participate with an evaluation of that could also branch out to include North Main businesses and see what we can do to...
Yes, I mean, that would be occurring based on conversations that Susan and I have had, that the whole of the hotel situation, which does include North Morro Bay, was part of that. So that wouldn't be anything different.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I have a question about his motion. So you are saying that we stick with one way, what, north on Main and south on the freeway for another year?
Yes.
Okay. That still bothers me because I still think at least you're going to be reaching out to the businesses up there now in addition to hotels, right, Janine?
Yes.
All right. My one request to get me to vote for this is let's get this report back in, say, January or February. Historically speaking, we always get this the month before the season starts. And if we can't have it in January or February so that we can really look at it, there's no point in doing it this way.
Yeah, we certainly would want to bring that back earlier in case there was additional ideas or discussion or things that have come up, like some comments about maybe altering the fare structure and wanting to have time to be able to work through that and have time to come back to council with anything like that. So I would kind of be targeting more in the fall for, you know, after the trolley season. We would have the surveying work done. We'd already have the outreach to the businesses done. So I think something would be targeting more fall and having maybe by January all of that kind of addressed and whatever changes might be adopted, so that then as we're starting to head into the budget development shortly thereafter in February, that we would have that already fleshed out and whatever changes to the season would already have been approved at that point.
Okay, so you're saying we could have this back early January, right?
Or before that.
Or before.
My target would be more in the fall sometime.
That would be even better. Okay, thank you.
I got one suggestion that maybe you and Chamber could get together and lay out a plan so when you bring it to us that it would, you know. Because right now, I think if you took a, they have five different ways of running this route. It's again, we're up here trying to run something that we don't know really that much about. So if you had a real good plan to bring it up, and I think you could probably work it out with the chamber better than you can with us, and then bring it forward. And I bet you that would work a lot better than the way it is now.
And I would just, we have to close this, but I think we need to reiterate the driver of this was is a lot of it through SLOCOG and our RTA reports, and that's where a lot of this data came from originally. So all in favor for this motion?
Actually, let me just make one comment about the highway, because I think that's a really important discussion, and the concern you've raised about safety on the highway is a good one. I have done some reading and just my own observations. I think there could be an argument made that North Main can be in some ways more dangerous than the highway because of the number of intersections and merging and exiting traffic. So it's just something to keep in mind. I don't necessarily want to get into that debate.
But let's close this. We've got a motion.
I don't want to debate it, but I just think that should be part of future discussions.
Let's vote.
Okay.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Great. Okay, 5-minute break. All right, we'll be right back. Thank you. Okay, everyone. Looks like everyone's back. Hello, AGP. All right. Thank you. Okay, thanks for the break. And moving on to item D1 is review of the county declaration of local emergency due to drought, discuss our water projections and resources, including the desalination plant, and discuss and consider declaring a local emergency for Morro Bay. And this would be Mr. Rob Livick.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor, Council. Happy to present this item regarding, well, not happy, that's the wrong word. As California is facing a severe water shortfall because of record low project, which means our stored water will be available this year because, you know, they're bringing water south of the Delta to meet health and safety needs.
few years ago, 5 years ago to speak, in December of 2009, City Council adopted a resolution declaring a water emergency for periods of short water, or basically when state water deliveries are below 35%, and authorized Public Services Director to implement mandatory water conservation measures during that time. That resolution is still on the books. It's never been rescinded. And, of course, I don't think since 2009 that we ever got above a 35% state water allocation. Also, this year, we did get a little bit more rainfall than we originally expected. We got we received about 5 inches of rainfall during the first 3 months of this year. But the U.S. Drought Monitor still classifies this area as a significant exceptional drought. And you can see on a couple of the attachments to the staff report, the dark reddish-brown spot that's kind of centralized right around San Luis Obispo County as being one of the highest drought-impacted areas of the country. The city of Morro Bay does get about 3,000 acre-feet, does have about 3,000 acre-feet a year in carryover water that I talked about earlier in San Luis Reservoir, which in as long as there's water flowing, some water flowing through the State Water Project, we'll be able to receive that and for up to about 3 years, use that based on our conserving usage in Morro Bay, because we've already seen about a 5% reduction in water use. The problem is as I've talked to a couple of people about our water supply, is we don't really have a resilient water supply. We are almost totally dependent on state water where we're at right now. We do have groundwater supplies that we've used in the past. We do have a desalinization plant that, if everything was working perfectly, would be able to supplement that water supply. And then we have another source of water that I keep talking about, which is conservation. That's our cheapest source of new water, is use as little water as possible. It's kind of, I remember hearing this when I was a kid, was the cheapest source of new energy is conserving energy. Well, I think the same thing holds true for water. If you don't have to build a new water project, you can use your existing water. I included something. I'm going to turn to another document that you don't have. Well, you may have if you reviewed the PWAB agenda, but just to give you an idea of how much water we've used for the first 3 months of 2014. And this is in the table in the director's report of the PWAB report, so it was published after this agenda went out. Just going down to the consumption rates, that the average consumption that was used in the community in January, before drought declaration, average water use was 106 gallons per person per day. February, we dropped down to 90.22 gallons per person per day, and we stayed about that same rate in March. Went up slightly, half a gallon per person per day. May have been due to spring break or something, more guests in town. Somebody used an extra gallon or two of water during that that time period. So we've done a very good job of water conservation, and there's a published diagram in the San Jose Mercury News that shows water use throughout the country, and coastal California is one of the most conserving areas of the country. Because of everybody knows that the water supply is limited here in coastal California. Water supply, low fuel moisture levels, which means a large threat to wildfire and threats to municipal water supplies, and that they may need to work with other jurisdictions to combat that drought. You know, this drought declaration basically sets them up for in a better position to apply for any drought relief funding that may be available, and especially there, I listened to parts of the Board of Supervisors discussion on this item, and the Ag Commissioner's office is very concerned about impacts to county agriculture due to this drought. So hoping to, you know, allow some of that drought relief money that USDA has to come home to our local agricultural operations. Want to talk a little bit about the desalination plant coastal permit status. The city, everybody knows that we had a permit in 1994 that was good for 5 years. That permit expired. In 2012, we discovered while we were working on the old wastewater treatment plant project, that expired permit. We have applied to Coastal to reenact that permit. We've gone back and forth a couple of rounds with questions and answers, and doing the call and response via letter writing. We're only getting so far, and we're going to reach out to some a little bit of technical assistance to help us finish this permit up. And we're working on a scope of work with a expert RBF consulting who's permitted. One of their plants that they permitted was the Poseidon plant in Southern California. So they're very, very high expertise in permitting desalination plants. They believe our plant has all the things that the Coastal is looking for, not a direct intake of seawater. We have wells along the coast that don't allow for entrainment of marine life into those wells, so that's a good thing. And our outfall is in a well-mixed area in the surf zone, so we do get a lot of mixing. So we just need a little bit of help to push this project further along and get to completion. We're hoping to bring that consultant on board for a fairly minor dollar amount. Still getting an estimate of that fees, but they're thinking, you know, somewhere $20,000 or less to bring us through permitting of this project. And that will add another water supply to our portfolio. So in conclusion, the state has requested water conservation efforts due to the current drought situation. City Council did enact a resolution in 2009 that put us in an emergency situation for when low water supplies. I think for increased public outreach and promotion of our water conservation efforts, I should prepare a resolution to bring back to Council next time that would basically reaffirm that emergency declaration to bring it to the forefront of everybody. It will also assist us. This new declaration may assist us in providing justification for applications for any emergency funding that may become available through the state and federal drought funding programs. And it expresses a need of urgency to the Coastal Commission in permitting our desalination plant. And that concludes my staff report, and happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate bringing this back with, and providing the information. George, do you want to start off with questions?
Well, I have one question for you. If we wouldn't have dropped the ball on this desal plant permit, which we did, would have just rolled over?
Yes.
We screwed up big time.
The Coastal Commission did give us specific conditions if we wanted to make that plant permanent back in the mid-90s, and that's about the same time State Water was coming on board. And I can see, at one point in my career, I used to work for the County Hydraulic Planning Office, and I, in the early, mid-90s, I did, late 90s, I did a, it's all running together now, I did an analysis, a regression analysis on drought return period, because it was a dry year then, and we were getting calls from the paper on, you know, we've heard what year flood this is, you know, what year drought is this, and this was, I believe, 99-2000, low water year, somewhere around 8 inches of water, I think, and that was a 10-year return period for a drought. So, you know, we are probably in, you know, I won't say it's a 100-year drought, but it's a drought that doesn't occur very often in our history. But given that, there have been longer-lasting droughts in the state of California's history and prehistory that have lasted many, many years. That's why I think resiliency is the operative word on the city's water supply. We need a variety of sources, state water, desal water, our local groundwater, conservation, and ultimately, you know, reclaimed water will make up that complete water portfolio.
Okay, thank you. Wow. I just have one other question. When we talk about what we are doing citywide, and a question I get from folks too is, well, what are you doing about enforcement? What if my neighbor isn't following the rules that you've already established?
So the city doesn't have resources to, you know, have the water patrol and drive around town and look for sprinklers on. As we see them, we will react to those, but we rely a lot on complaints about, you know, sprinklers running, water running down the street, and we will go out. And our goal is not to issue a fine or write a ticket. Our goal is to conserve water. So we'll work with the person, and they may just not know that a sprinkler head was busted off and is just pouring water out into the street. Also, if people want to contact, if they have some issue with they can't meet the watering days that are specified in the regulations. The ordinance does give power to the Public Services Director to modify those days on a case-by-case basis. So if I've had one recently where they're only in town 3 days a week, they don't have an automatic sprinkler system, and so we have accommodated people like that. We document that, and we don't put a sign out in front of their house, but they basically allowed permission. And, I was just thinking of another conversation I had with a council person. That might work for what we talked about was for newly planted, like, vegetable gardens where you're not using a lot of water, but you may have to water more frequently. I think we can that section of the code does allow us to make special provisions like that.
Okay, great. And I think just for the public, I was wondering, because we all at the council level receive a lot of emails over and over, could you speak a little bit to your involvement outside of the city of Morro Bay, like with the IRWM projects and anything that you're doing that are keeping us up on what's going on regionally, with especially everyone hears about state and possibly federal drought funding? But could you talk about a little bit of what you're doing?
Sure. The IRWM is the Integrated Water Management Plan. We used to call it the earworm, but people don't like that, and I'm not supposed to ever say that in public, but I think it's a cool acronym. The IRWM is a plan, regional plan, that sets priorities for water resources for this county. And it was developed to allocate Proposition 84 money, which we're going into the last round of Prop 84 money. But there will be a water bond on the November ballot, maybe the June, I can't remember which one, probably November. Water bond, new water bond on the ballot that'll set aside more water project money. We don't know exactly what that bond is going to be. You know, what there's competing bond proposals in the legislature right now with different pieces of projects. Some have lots of money for the State Water Project, as it's known, the Friendship Canals is what it's being called now, the canals that link North and South California through the Delta, and then money for other projects throughout the state. So the IRWM plan is what sets up with a successful grant program, and the State Water Resources Control Board says for a successful grant application, it's about $20,000 to $30,000. Now that's a countywide grant application, not just one little project from Morro Bay, but they all go in as a we submit a suite of projects as our county to compete for this IRWM Prop 84 money, and to put that application together, it's about $20,000 to $30,000, and the county really encourages well thought out, competitive projects. There is $200 million that the governor has recently carved out of this already allocated Prop 84 money for immediate drought relief. So it's projects that can go to construction by April of next year. So we have a couple of ideas for some modest projects dealing with nitrates in the Chorro Valley that we'll be submitting to the county and working with them to move forward with them. Those are they're kind of on the small end for projects, but they do bring more usable water into Morro Bay. So they could be made shovel ready fairly quickly. But we have a real tight timeline on delivering this list to the county and to the state, so we'll be trying to finish this up the rest of this week to get that moving forward, and then bringing a authorization resolution back to council before the application goes in. So those are kind of the funding efforts that we're worked on. Also, Councilman Smuckler sits on another acronym, the RAC, and I'm his alternate for that. That's the Water Resources Advisory Committee, which advises the flood control district or the county board of supervisors when they're wearing their flood control district and water conservation district hats on water resources needs for the entire county. So we are highly invested in the water needs for not only for Morro Bay, the North Coast, and the county as a region.
And then if you permit me one final question in relation to the regional efforts going on beyond our city borders. On March 11, it's reflected in the staff report, you attached some county information, and I'm making sure that, well, in March, I'm making sure. Okay, March 11, the County Board of Supervisors passed their proclamation establishing a local emergency due to drought conditions. Do you know what the vote on that was? Did they all vote?
I believe it was a unanimous. 5-0. I believe it was a 5-0 vote, but
maybe our RAC member would know.
I don't know for sure, but I would assume that because of the main point that Mr. Livick declared, that by passing this declaration, you become eligible for a lot of additional support. That it was a 5-0 vote.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thanks for explaining all that. You're obviously doing a ton of work on water. Thanks.
Is that all?
Oh. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you
all
very
right.
much.
Good. All right. Thanks for that. Nancy, do you have any questions?
I do have a couple. People have asked me that in order to help them save water, we want them to reduce the amount of water that they get. How many gallons are in a unit of water? Because I don't pay much attention to my water bill because my husband does that, and we pay it automatically. But it comes in units. So how do I know if I'm reducing the number of gallons I use on a daily basis? How many gallons in a unit?
A unit is 100 cubic feet of water, and there's 7.48 gallons per cubic foot, so there's 748, or if we want to talk in round numbers, I would just say 750 gallons per unit.
Okay, one unit is about 750 gallons. Okay, and the average person uses 90 gallons per day right now.
Yes.
So that's a lot of extra water they're saving, right?
Yes, because...
Now, is that units per month or per year, or how is that broken down? If you're talking about 90 gallons per day, is that 748 gallons per day in units, or is it per month?
We bill on a monthly basis, so I'm not sure what our average unit count per customer is, but I think I have the technology to do the math in my pocket here.
Oh, good. Yes, computers are wonderful.
So, well, 850 gallons per household per month.
Okay, now how many units is that then?
748 is 7.8 units per month.
That gets to sound like a lot more than when we're just talking about 90 gallons per day per person.
Yeah, 90 gallons per day per person. I think Mayor Irons mentioned this to me. Monterey is a very conserving community, and they're at 60 gallons.
65
gallons per person per day. The state figures if you're only using water for indoor uses only, you can get down to 55 gallons per person per day on average. There are some people that can get down to less than that, of course. But, you know, you figure...
They smell bad.
You're turning your, you know... I don't think they're accounting for everybody that puts a bucket in their shower to recover their heat-up water and is using that for, you know, irrigation or toilet flushing.
Right.
Not everybody is... that conserving, but some people are, and so on average, the indoor water usage is about 55 gallons per person per day. That's about as low as on an average that you could probably get.
And we're at 90, but that's still
people
pretty
are
good.
People are, you know, we haven't cut off water for outdoor uses, so people are still irrigating, and that's one of your highest water usages is that outdoor water use.
Oh, I know that. My husband reminds me every month. Okay, so that's enough math for the moment. The other question I get a lot is, what's the difference between water equivalency units and a unit of water? Are we talking about the same thing?
No, they're two different things. A water equivalency unit is set up in the Muni Code. It's basically what one average residential house uses in cubic feet per year. And I can't remember what that – the number's in the code, and I could look it up. But it's basically what the average residents used in when the code was written. So a residential unit is one WEU. And then there's a huge table in the Muni Code for what different square footages for commercial usage are. So a restaurant might have, you know, point something WEUs per square foot or per 100 square foot of restaurant area. It's to convert everything to a unitized number.
So you get water equivalency units based on the square footage of your building, say. But how does that relate then to the number of water units that you use?
It doesn't relate at all. Water equivalency units is only for determining how much water we have for new construction.
Okay. Thank you. I think that explains it. One quick question.
I think we'll get to the water equivalency units next.
Yeah, I think that gets into our next one. Now, I read someplace that our water delivery is up 5%. Is that state water? Is that true? What is it?
Yes, state water. Friday, there was an announcement made. They went from 0% delivery to the state water project to a 5% delivery to the state water project, which is good for Morro Bay because we have this stored water in San Luis Reservoir, which guarantees that we're going to be able to use that stored water
for
2014.
For the whole year.
Yeah, for the whole year. We don't know what's going to happen next year, and I'll use my famous statement. If I knew what the water year was going to be like next year, I probably wouldn't be sitting here. If I could make those predictions with certainty.
Wouldn't we all? Thank you very much. You've been very helpful.
Noah.
Thank you. So at this point, the 5% allocation that looks like the state's going to be able to deliver, would you expect that there's any chance that that could be reduced at this point? It seems like that's based on our rainwater, so they're not anticipating any future rainfall. So that 5% is looking pretty good for us.
They don't make those number changes lightly. So it's based on the Northern California did get a fair amount of increased snowfall along with the rainwater. That's really what it's based on, is that snowpack, because that's stored water in the mountains that will run off to the streams that feed into Lake Orville and Lake Shasta that can be distributed down into the state water project.
Okay. And the trend that you're seeing, and confirm this, but it seems to me, though, if you look historically at our allocation. Okay, and so just to confirm, we are living off of the bank in the San Luis Reservoir. That is a finite bank that's been accumulated, but now at this point we will be
Drawing that bank account down.
So the idea would be that our conservation really is meaningful and will help preserve that bank as much as possible for future years if necessary.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
And to add to that, I think to be able to draw from the bank, we have to have some sort of allocation number there, basically saying that we have flow so we can make the deliveries, because if we have zero allocation, there's no flow to make the deliveries. Is that correct?
Right, because we have more stored water than any other community in the county. And San Luis County is one of the smallest contractors on the state water project, so it's a very small amount. The CCWA, which runs this coastal branch of the state water project, is unlikely to turn on their water treatment plant and their big pumps just to pump Morro Bay with water if no other water is coming through this coastal branch. So the coastal branch serves Morro Bay. We're the largest contractor in the county. The Five Cities area and a few mutual water companies there. But most of it goes to Santa Barbara County is their largest customer.
So how about the other thing I think that was good to mention as far as whether or not the county went into this local emergency and it makes them eligible for grant funds and other opportunities. I think the other part of that is under those conditions, it allows for relief from CEQA. So for some of these projects that require immediate shovel-ready projects, there is some relief there. And I think
there's some relief.
That's one component.
Yeah. It doesn't exempt you from CEQA. You still have to perform analysis of it, but there's some accelerated timelines.
Right. And so based on that, there is an intertie, and I think we might be able to, I think we're doing great on this presentation for council and for the listening viewers, watching viewers. But, you know, as far as the intertie goes, there is an intertie, if you could just speak to that briefly.
Sure. The coastal branch of, like I talked about, that brings state water over here, splits off and provides water to the five cities kind of down the Highway 101 corridor, and then splits off to what's known as the Chorro Valley Pipeline that brings water to California Men's Colony, County Operations Center, and then to Morro Bay. We're at the kind of the end of that. The Nacimiento Water Project kind of follows that same pathway, and it comes very close to connecting the two together. The Nacimiento water is raw water. It's untreated water. State Water Project water is treated water at the Polonio Pass Water Treatment Plant. So to use that Nacimiento water, you couldn't just tie those two pipelines together. You would have to treat that surface water at a treatment plant. Well, where they're very close to coming together, there happens to be a surface water treatment plant at that location at the California Men's Colony. And the county is working with the Bureau of Prisons to gain access and to be able to operate that water treatment plant and to tie the Nacimiento project into that water treatment plant to supply water to the Chorro Valley Pipeline, which would not only serve the city of Morro Bay, but would serve the county operations center, the jail. So the county isn't doing it just for Morro Bay, but it serves a regional basis there by tying that together. And we've been talking with the county about that, but, you know, we need to probably up the ante of the talks, because I'm sure that it's that water will come at some cost to the city of Morro Bay, and they're still working on the logistics of making that connection, see if it will really work. Then we need to start talking about what those costs could potentially be to use that water.
All right, good. And as far as the desal plant goes, you're saying we're making progress, and you explain that there's a consultant and maybe to help with the permitting, maybe $20,000 or so, but we need more help with that. Is that the kind of help you're talking about?
That's exactly the kind of help we're talking about.
We're working on that as well.
Yeah, because we, I won't say that we're banging our head against the wall, but, you know, we're not making much progress, and we need some intermediary to step.
All right, so we went through questions. We do have someone in the audience, and I'd open up for public comment at this time. Anybody would like to speak on this item? I'll open up for public comment. None at this time. Thank you. Then I'd close public comment and bring it back. Is there any other discussion? I think we've gone through this pretty well. And if not, I would just make a motion to approve staff recommendation, reaffirming the resolution from 2009 and bringing that back to council. We have a motion and a second by Noah. Any other discussion?
It seems like to me there's this panic thing going on here. If we have water, why are we bringing in a local emergency? We seem like we have plenty of water for Morro Bay. Why do we need why aren't we taking the second? Why aren't we looking at this down the road and see?
I could respond.
See what we're going to do with our desal plant and things. If we get that all together, I mean, the emergency part I just don't understand. Maybe I'm just not getting it. But I'm for conserving water, and I'm doing my job. In fact, I talked to my sons today to start trying to work harder on the restaurants because they are users of water.
So, George, we had an opportunity for a discussion and everything, and there was no more discussion. We made a motion, and now you're kind of opening up a different ball of discussion here. So is there discussion on the motion? Is there a discussion on the motion?
Never mind.
Okay. Is there any other discussion on the motion? Yeah. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries.
No.
Was there no to
I
that?
I said no, yeah.
Okay. So we have a 4-1 on that.
Can I make a comment to George's point? Because I think for the public to know, we right now with our 5% allocation, this is as far as I understand, historically the lowest allocation we've ever received from the state water program. We've had this declaration in effect since 2009. We're extending it. So if it was important in 2009 to this point, it would seem like we're at the lowest point of water that we've ever been in. So it's very prudent for us to continue that, particularly in light of the grant and other opportunities that come along with it. Is that accurate, Mr. Levick?
Not only the to reinforce the water conservation needs, but it does, like you said, it does set us up for potentially expressing our urgency needs for monetary support and permitting support to get our desal permit approved.
Okay, great. Thanks for following up on that. So moving on to item D2. Item D2 is discussion of retrofit potential requirement and review of the Public Works Advisory Board special meeting regarding the water allocations, and that's Mr. Leibick.
Thank you. This item is coming back to you based on your direction at the February 11th meeting to where you allocated the WEUs for this year's development allocation. Sending that item to PWEB to further discuss potential retrofit options. You know, in the past, we had a toilet retrofit program, but that program is kind of tapped out. We've almost every toilet in town is done, and to go to the next level is just not economically viable. So we had discussion with members of the development community and public at that PWEB, Public Works Advisory Board meeting, on different types of options that we might want to consider in a retrofit program. We talked about, you know, lawn and landscape replacement programs. If somebody were to redo landscaping, could they get credit for that? You know, I'm sure that would include redoing of irrigation systems. Gray water installation in new construction. What I'm getting at there is that in new construction, it's easy to put that extra set of pipes in for use of gray water. Retrofitting that after the fact, really about the only real effective use of gray water you're going to get is through the washing machine water. You can't recover that sink and shower water very easily and use it in a gray water system on a retrofit basis. So having that go into a retrofit requirement so that those get installed upon new construction. Installation of rainwater recovery systems. This one will be harder to quantify because it's based on, you know, we could, you know, look at low rainfall levels. Two of people from the development community were really interested in programs like the program we outlined in the Public Works Advisory Board, the Smart Water Program, where it provides feedback to the customer on how much water they're using and what types of conservation tips could be used. You know, we've talked to this company that provides that service where their billing data is transmitted to a third-party company, and then they, based on the person's billing data, demographics, they use aerial photography and GIS to look at the properties. And, you know, if it's all hardscape, they're not going to recommend, you know, landscaping type retrofits. They might look at, you know, gray water or something, you know, like that. So tailored to that. We're also looking at perhaps another option instead of that smart water is if we went to AMR or automatic meter reading, that interface would be made available to the customer. So you could know on a daily basis how much water you're using per day. And in our water capital program, starting next year is when we propose to start converting the city to AMR, or automatic meter reading. We've also had a proposal from an outside vendor Siemens that was presented at the last Public Works Advisory Board, and I believe I transmitted some of that information to City Council on their presentation, and the mayor seen that along with the city manager, where they would provide that retrofit for us. Siemens, as a private company, can take care to take advantage of tax credits. They're making money on the I'm not sure how they make the money. That's another, if I knew that, I probably wouldn't be here too. But they somehow have a business model to do these energy conservation programs, changing out HVAC units, lighting modifications. They provide that to large institutional companies and cities is their business model, and get paid back through a portion of those savings, and the city sees a portion of those savings until the payoff period. We'll probably bring that item as a future agenda item to the full council, a presentation on that, but that's the type of things that we would be looking at doing with this enhanced water conservation. So what I'm asking for out of this item is to send us back to more fully, if council desires, to fully develop a retrofit package that would give some guidelines to the development community. Public services staff would evaluate those retrofits as submitted and make sure that they comply with the ordinance regarding offset of WEUs. And that concludes my staff report.
Great, Rob. Thank you. Thanks for doing all this work and for PWAB participating in that special meeting. I'll start to my right. Nancy, do you want to start us off on questions on this?
Yeah, I do have one. I know you're going to go back and develop a program. When do you see this starting?
You know, I have in the staff report a start date of June. I didn't say the beginning or end. Probably more likely the end of June, the fiscal year. And I think Mr. Nagy was right. You know, typically we projects that are, you know, technically complete or in the pipeline, those new regulations wouldn't affect those projects is traditionally how council has imposed new regulations.
Okay, which brings me right to my next question. Good move there. There are a lot of projects out there waiting, and, you know, it's nobody's fault. We just don't have anybody to do the work. So we're talking about June. At what point specifically is a project in the pipeline? I mean, if they have submitted their plan and nobody's had a chance to get back to them and tell them whether or not it's incomplete, just because there's no staff to let them know if it's a complete project or not, are they in the pipeline? Because, I mean, theoretically, some of these things aren't even going to get beyond the first step before next fall, probably.
Projects submitted, we have, per the Permit Streamlining Act, have 30 days to deem them complete or incomplete. If we fail to act, they're automatically deemed complete.
Devil's advocate here, which of course I would never do. We just approved the final tract map for the Teresa project, so we could have 10 new homes come in tomorrow or next week.
It is there is a potential for 10 new homes to come in next week. I wouldn't expect.
I don't expect it either, but
because
okay.
They're being sold on spec,
right?
And they. By they can't sell those homes until the final map is recorded. The map will be submitted probably tomorrow. It won't record for 10 days, so
they'll never make it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so let's say somebody submits their project by the 1st of May, and you get back to them the 28th of May, that they need this, this, and this because it's incomplete. So does that make them in the pipeline June 1st or out of not yet there?
If June 1st were the cutoff date and we've used the same methodology that we've applied to different cutoff dates, they would be not in the pipeline.
Thank you. I think that makes the whole thing really very clear.
No questions, Noah? None? George, any questions?
Yeah, what do you think this is going to affect the cost of building? You got any idea?
Not at this point in time. In the old program, I would suspect that it's going to be pretty similar to the cost of the old program. You used to have to retrofit 10 toilets to get a WEU. So that was about $200 per toilet, buying the toilet and getting it installed, so about $2,000. I would expect to be in the order of magnitude of about that, because we're trying to get the same amount of water savings as we did with those 10 toilets. That's why we're not proposing to do the 140 toilets that would need to be done under current code requirements.
So you figure about $2,000.
I figure about $2,000, somewhere in that order of magnitude. Might be.
That doesn't
might be
seem
two, might be
that
three.
Doesn't seem a deal breaker.
You done, George?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Christine. None. Okay, and so I guess that you did address one of my questions as far as being in the pipeline and permitting, which Mr. Nagy questioned early on, and probably just as well that he asked this question at public comment, considering where we are with this staff report. So good for him. I hope he's not necessarily watching, but he'll hear about it. And then, so tonight, based on this, you feel comfortable with the recommendation. You can go back. You can figure out a specific plan that would kind of identify a retrofit program or an ALU program that would address a water equivalency unit.
Yes. And we're not – I think we would – the resolution would come back, would leave some openness to it. So if somebody came up with the next greatest idea – that it wouldn't, wouldn't say you have to do a toilet or you have to do a lawn. If somebody came up with a proposal that achieved the water conservation that was needed, I would say that we would entertain that. If they could show me the math that did it, I think we should look at things like
okay.
that.
Okay, great. Those are the only questions I have. Any more comments before we open up for public comment? Okay. Would anybody like to speak to a public comment on this item? Please come forward. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to you. I'll close public comment and bring it back. Nancy.
I do have a few comments, and they're just suggestions for as you're fulfilling this. I know that many of us believe that you get much further with positive reinforcements rather than doing penalties like in-lieu fees. So instead of imposing in-lieu fees, what about developing a portfolio, and it sounds like that's almost where you're going here, of choices that provide incentives to reduce water use or improve the runoff. And just some of my suggestions that you might want to add to this, if you're interested, would be maybe give people points if they put in an artificial lawn. I know a lot of people are doing this now, as well as our usual drought-tolerant planting thing that we do. Incentives for putting in permeable surfaces, and I know we used to talk about that a lot rather than concrete or asphalt driveways and walkways, things where we don't have runoff, where it actually does in a way save water. And then points for tankless or on-demand water heaters, and I know one of the things that you mentioned was the gray water installation. So I was just going to kind of not a choice.
It's dedicated to that.
It's dedicated to parking. So these would be different than some of the in-lieu fees that we do now.
I think they're the same as the parking in-lieu fees because you're allowed to provide parking or pay in-lieu. Now, some
realistically speaking,
they don't have enough land area to provide the parking, and they don't want to buy a piece of property to build a parking lot on, so it's their choice to pay the in-lieu fees. Maybe it's not so much of a choice, but it still is their choice.
Okay. Any other Comments?
Yeah, just quickly. I think this is really actually pretty exciting to update this program, and I would agree with a lot of the comments that the old program was just infeasible and has needed to be updated for quite a while. And I'm in favor of this particularly because I think it's really important that new projects pay their fair share. Every home or business in the community has paid in and bought into our system, and a new project should as well. And as George's questions pointed out, it's relatively modest, and ultimately it provides more stability for all of us in the system that we're sharing. So I think that's important, and the options that you've reviewed here I think are really starting to address a flexible program to allow a project to make sure that it works for them, and I think that's a refreshing change from the old program, which was, you know, just the toilet and only the toilet, which we all know isn't possible anymore. So I just want to make sure that we continue that public review component. You did a great job working with the Public Works Advisory Board and the contracting community that was involved there, and so I would assume that we'll bring them along as we start to look at the final details of this as we go forward.
Yes.
Thanks, Noah. George?
Well, normally I'd be very much against this, but it does sound like a little, like I said, it's modest, not very much money to do this, so I hope we don't find out later on that it's more than that. And, you know, I always get nervous when I think about that we're going to start working towards moratorium in Morro Bay. That always bothers me. But this seems to be all right so far.
Thanks, George. Christine?
Thanks very much. I also echo everyone's comments about appreciating going back to the Public Works Advisory Board with this. I think that through that process, we discussed this February 11th at the council level, and by extending the time to discuss this portion, mm-hmm. we've heard the voices of the construction community, real estate community, people who are telling us what's going on with the raw land, and also giving us their opinion on, you know, how to craft a program that works. No one is saying don't have a program. That's what I find really, that's why I really appreciate about us taking a little extra time, small amount of time really, but engaging the community in a proactive way so that when this comes forward, they feel as though they have buy-in and they've been heard, and you know, they're more likely to agree that it's a fair policy for the city. So in none of the discussions we've had, and in the public comment from folks in the construction community, we did not hear them say, you know, this, it's not, that they didn't want to get rid of, or they weren't advocating for us to throw out any kind of an offset. They understand very clearly, especially now, our water situation in the city of Morro Bay. Mm-hmm. So we're able to work as a team together on crafting a policy that works, and I think that's what I'm most excited about tonight. I do remember that when we voted to move it forward in February but pull out this piece for the retrofit, Councilmember Smuckler, you did vote no. So it sounds tonight like you're feeling more comfortable with the direction, and I think that's great, and I appreciate you allowing us the time to, you know, air this out a little bit and then come back and reconsider. So that's also a good thing if we have a little more consensus moving forward. So I appreciate that. And thanks to the – and actually thanks to Mr. Levick, you and your staff, because you had to scramble to send it to the PWAB and make sure that conversation happened in order to get it back. So I appreciate the time you took to do it, and I think it was a pretty quick turnaround that I think will help us have a policy that works, and it won't, hopefully, it'll be very creative. And some of the, and actually the in-lieu idea did come from someone in the construction community, so they don't necessarily see it as a disadvantage, they see it as an advantage to, you know, move their projects forward, another option that they and their clients can choose. So just in general, thanks to everyone, and thanks for a great discussion up here amongst ourselves this evening too. Thanks. And I'm in support and ready to move forward.
Great, thanks. And going last, most of the comments are taken, but it really is interesting. I know the in lieu fee was, you know, I talked to one of the builders in town.
Local builders, yeah, were there. Okay. So what we had talked about in the staff report, such as lawn replacements, that was brought up. The tankless water heaters, which I forgot to put in my list, was brought up, along with water circulating pumps was another option. The in-lieu fee was an option. And we'll put toilets in there, too, because there could be a toilet or two out there in Morro Bay, and I'm not going to stop anybody from retrofitting toilets. They won't be prohibited. Those are the types of things that they support for retrofits.
So they did support it.
Yes, they came to the Public Works Advisory Board meeting with ideas.
Okay.
Great. Thanks, George. So anybody want to make a motion to approve staff recommendation on this water equivalency unit request?
So moved. I would move to – I'm sorry. You're looking for a motion. You didn't make a motion?
No.
Did you want to make a motion?
Entertain a motion. No, go ahead.
Okay. So I would move that City Council accept staff recommendation for agenda item D2.
As presented?
Oh, excuse me, as presented.
Okay, is that good enough?
Yes.
Okay, good. Do I have a second?
Second.
So we have a motion by Christine, a second by Noah. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Thank you. With that, now we're moving on to council declaration of future agenda items. Anybody like to speak to this item?
I would. I have one. You ready?
Sure.
Okay. I'd like to follow up on, there were some public comments about Verge's request to evaluate landowner, consent of landowner dock use.
Yep.
And I'd like to include in that discussion their kiosk proposal.
Okay. Thanks. I figured we were going to get that. Okay. I think there's a lot of heads nodding on that.
We have
consensus and support on that. I think we're all ready to jump on that one. Thank you, Noah. Anything else? Nancy, anything? Okay. We're all good? Okay, good. All right. We were all there and ready to go. So with that, we have all our consent and agenda items on there. And thanks for the work tonight and meeting adjourned. Thank you.